Welcome aboard, you people. Starship Rokan Show. Slightly banged up, but ready to go.
Do you still have the coronavirus?
I do, yes. I have.
Can we get it through the radio?
I'm patient zero. I would hope you can't. No, you can't. But you will be entertained and informed throughout the radio.
You have a really good sound quality out of your hazmat suit.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I had a specially microphone installed, especially just for today. All right. Coming up on the program, we're about to join Dr. J. John Najarian, talk about what happened in the markets here. Stay tuned. That's coming your way in about 30 seconds. We also are in this hour going to be talking to Ben Bradley about Jussie Smollett. You heard a little bit of that in the news. Jussie Smollett in court today, his lawyer. I like the lawyer's statement. We don't plan on pleading anything but not guilty. So, yes, he'll be back here in court. My guess is I think in 30 days that's not going to hold. But we'll just have to see. And then Demetrius Ivory on the snow. The snow. This is going to be the biggest snow event of the year. You knew that this was going to happen, didn't you? You just knew that this was going to be the moment that... As soon as we had like a 50-degree, we had a 50-degree weekend.
Yeah, you have to be
weekend.
Teased with spring first.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was beautiful this weekend. And then the next thing you know, a ginormous, big, whopping 12-incher comes at you. And that's what we're talking about. Now, Demetrius is downplaying it. He was going with that 4-8. But it appears that there are other forecast models that say more. So we'll find out from Demetrius. I'll challenge him on that coming up. And then what happened today in the markets? How does that affect your 401k? That's also coming up this hour, too. We're going to talk to a guy who's an expert in that specifically. Because people have been watching that, right? If you got a 401k or you have investments of any kind, you've been watching this with glee, actually, as the Dow, you know, got up to around 30,000, and you're like, wow, this is really, if you look at, you know, most of these mutual funds, they really benefited from that because the Dow is essentially a mutual fund, right? That's the number that they're giving you. So as you looked at that, when you got to the 30,000, it was, or close to it, there was this moment of looking at that going, wow, this is something. I hope this holds on forever. Is it time to sell? What's going to happen? And then today, taking a 1,000-point dump, people are going to be looking again today and thinking, well, what should I do? And that's where the panic sets in. That's where most investment guys, gals, people that want to help you with your investings, they will tell you, don't look at that every day. Do not make that move because that will create panic, and you don't want to panic in a moment like this, and you don't want to sell into a descending market. Although this, you know, it was interesting in the middle of the day. We seem to have lost Dr. J here. So as we were going to get him in, now, I'm told him 30 seconds. As you watch the market move intraday, it would touch 1,000, just a little over 1,000, and then it would come back. In the last hour, you always watch to see as it comes back. It came back to about down 755 and then back out to 1031 just to close to hold. And that's generally the way that the trading works, right, where you get in the middle of the day, you got people taking the big trading companies are taking positions, holding them, and then you've got the computer trading that goes on, where the computer trading is buying and selling off, trying to find what the water level is going to be. And at the end of the day today, it was just over 1,000 for this particular instant, you know, this particular moment. But is that the news that actually makes will that be the end of this? Is this just the news of the coronavirus actually popping up in some other countries? Italy now seems to be affected by it. South Korea is affected by it. Not in a major way yet by the United States, but you did see the story over the weekend about the 14 people who came over from Asia that had tested positive and that they were let into the country and that the White House was upset about that. And all those things that were playing into this were, without doubt, seeding the minds of those who are going to open the trading day. And if you looked at the overnight trading and you looked at the Asia markets, you saw that there was a big sell-off there. And really, the issue is about China. So we will talk about that coming up. Dr. J, we're still in search. He's in Las Vegas on a trading floor of a different kind, I'm told. And he's trying to find a quiet space. So we'll get to him as soon as we possibly can. But first, here's Lauren Lapka. She'll tell you about the traffic and the weather.
Mayor Lightfoot promising to revitalize the South and West Side. Joe Donlin goes to Pullman to see how the money is being spent. WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
You're welcome.
Very well done. Ben Bradley joins us from the WGN-TV newsroom right now. And our buddy Jesse Smollett was in town, wasn't he?
Yes, it's like deja vu. You remember we were talking last week about how being a reporter in Chicago, when it comes to, you know, some stories, it's like the movie Groundhog Day. Last week, it was Rod Blagojevich back in the news after 8 years. This week, it's Jesse Smollett back in the news after 1 year.
It is. It's good to have him back in town. I'm sure he really enjoyed being here. I wonder what the reception at O'Hare was like.
a little different. Although I was just talking with Kelly Barnicle, who's actually sitting next to me here in our little radio booth. She handles a lot of our court stories for us, field produces. And she was saying that Jussie Smollett had quite the entourage today as he went in and out of the county building. You know, you'd think he's a big time star.
You know what,
but he's.
You know what happens here, though?
Yeah.
This is undoubtedly what occurs. When stars are on the other side, they're moving their way down the mountain, their entourages get bigger in proportion to how in debt they are. And they got guys that are still sticking around waiting to get paid, because they know that the guys who are in the entourage who are going to get paid, the guys who are going to be in front of them are going to get paid. So the entourage gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's like Pythagorean's theorem or something. You've just developed a new theorem for celebrity groupies.
I'm going to call MIT.
Yeah, but that's interesting because R. Kelly, you know, had that big entourage at the end for his final court appearances before he got locked up, only for us to find out that he's broke.
Yeah.
And can't pay anybody.
Well, it was good. Well, once he was locked up.
Allegedly.
Well, hold on. Once he got locked up is when they announced he was broke, because that protects him from his own entourage at that point. Because
who did I give power of attorney to?
During the rest of that, the rest of the entourage is, they're still waiting. And he keeps telling them, don't worry, I got the money. I got it. Because, you know, there are guys in that entourage that, you know, they got bad attitudes. There are guys who are not there for all the right reasons. Four
you think?
Seasons. Yeah.
Way to work in a sponsor, by the way.
I did, yes. Thank you.
Anyway. Yeah, but so Jussie's back, now facing charges filed by the special prosecutor. And interestingly, Kelly was telling me that in court today, it was kind of a case of, who's the judge going to be? Because there was some question about that, and the first two names that got selected were allegedly sick today. So the duties will fall to Judge James Lynn.
Wow.
I have not had the pleasure of being in his courtroom before.
Yes, I know him, actually.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Is he prepared?
It actually couldn't go to a better judge. He's one of the most, the most respected guys. Mm. In Chicago.
Good to know. Yeah. You know, the judge makes a huge difference when it comes to how the proceedings play out. I'm thinking of, you know, in the Jason Van Dyke trial, you know, you had the judge who had been on the bench for decades. He, you know, he was a decorated veteran, and he ran that court like it was, you know, a military formation. And it affected everything from the way the media was able to cover it to, you know, of course, how the attorneys conducted themselves, and to the judge's credit in the Van Dyke case, because he has a reputation of being kind of an old school guy, he could have easily said, you know, no cameras in the court for this, because keep in mind, it's up to the presiding judge. And he didn't. He embraced the future. He said this is an important case that a lot of Chicago wants to know about.
My sense is that Jimmy Lynn is not going to put cameras in the courtroom because he's not worried about a rating point. I think I don't think is going to happen. I don't think this thing's going to go to trial. I don't think there's any chance it's going to trial, because his attorney who was representing him today, she also needs to get paid. Right? No one's going to do this for necessarily just for the publicity.
Your Honor, I object to your statement. Do you remember Drew Peterson and his gaggle of attorneys who I'm fairly sure were doing it for the publicity?
Do you remember how that trial turned out?
Your Honor, the attorneys withdraw the statement.
Yeah, okay. That's the point. I mean, if he wants to win, he's going to have to get an attorney who knows what they're doing here. And basically, this is such, at the end of the day, the fact that he's still fighting this thing after it's very clear what he did, there's all the evidence points toward him in this. It doesn't point toward anybody else.
There wasn't somebody else.
Right.
Who?
So the Ocendero brothers, all they have to do is get up and go, hey, we got these checks. Here are times we met with them. Here's what he asked us to do. There's email exchanges. I mean, it was those guys.
And for the carnival, to underscore the carnival-like atmosphere there, the Osundaro brothers showed up at court today, even though they didn't need to. It's not as though this is the trial and they're going to be called as witnesses. But it is evidence that in some regards, they're still trying to cash in on the publicity that surrounds this case.
Right.
Because they showed up.
I'm going to tell you something, though. I mean, this I'm just a prediction for you, and you can share this with all your court-watching folks, that this particular judge is no nonsense. He is not about this guy's totally about the four corners of the law. And I don't think that a lot of spectacle and speculating is, I just made up a word, is going to happen.
You learned that one in law school?
Yeah, I did, yeah. When I walked by a law school, that's the last time I was in law school. It was raining near Loyola, and I stepped into the law school there for a second just to look at my phone.
But Judge Vincent Gaughan, when he ran the Van Dyke trial,
right,
it was four corners neatly pressed. And there were still moments that things, got testy and interesting and unpredictable.
Listen, this would be great, but this is a very low-level case.
Yeah, we're not going to have a month of testimony.
Right.
We're going to have, this is, in some regards, it almost feels like everybody involved is trying to score the last point.
Right.
In what is a losing basketball game for everybody involved.
Right. No one's going to the playoffs in this game.
No.
Let's just put it this way. Who's,
this is suburban peewee league when it comes to the law.
No one is surviving this.
I mean, Dan Webb is a former United States attorney. He is one of the top private attorneys now in the country, working for Winston Strawn. He got appointed as a special prosecutor, and you got to imagine what he was thinking as he's going through. Okay, so now he was going to Subway for the 6-inch or the 12 the foot long tuna sub. What was the temperature like? Who are these Osundaro? What is Empire? I mean, somebody probably had to tell Dan Webb what Empire is. Is that the carpet company? 588-2300.
I do think that it probably was a conversation exactly like that. But that's really not, at the end of the day, I hate the expression, but I'm going to use it anyway. At the end of this day, this is not going any further than what we just saw.
No, and it wouldn't have gone any further.
Because, wait.
Jussie Smollett, first of all, had the prosecutor gotten him to admit guilt in order to accept that deal, and had he not walked to the microphones to thumb his nose.
Right.
At the system 8 seconds after he got the deal.
That's what he's getting called back for right now.
Right. Right.
So that's why they want him back in town.
Plus, you have all of this going on with a backdrop of an election for the Cook County State's Attorney.
Oh.
Kim Fox was just in our studio with the Democratic challengers on Friday.
Uh-huh.
And it was a great debate. We aired it Sunday at 6 on WGN. You can still get it at WGNTV.com. But she was asked point blank by our political reporter, Tamon Bradley, why did you not get Jussie Smollett to admit guilt as part of that deal? And she didn't answer the question.
Right.
We
asked the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And it's
telling to me that she doesn't have a better answer than just going back to the whole, well, our emphasis needs to be on prosecuting violent crimes and not nonviolent. Like, we've talked about that. That was questions one and two of the debate.
Yeah, but this is high profile. As I said, and then when she said that, I said, this is a heater case, though. Right? So it's going to get a lot of attention. So why wouldn't you do it in that particular mm-hmm. case? And her answer was to define heater, was to go for, well, now what is a heater case? Is that a case that's it's kind of important, not kind of important? Right. I mean, just because it's publicly interesting doesn't mean it's legally important.
And in fairness, though, I wish that the whole Jussie Smollett case and her handling of it hadn't happened, because then we could spend more time debating the real issues in this race for state's attorney,
right,
which
more
are significant, right?
Yeah, I think
they're
worse for
her.
It's
bail reform, and it's, it's how do we treat nonviolent offenders who are, stealing $1,000 purchases from the Louis Vuitton store on the Mag Mile? How are we treating carjacking suspects? If you use a gun in a crime, should that be an automatic jail sentence while you're awaiting trial?
Well, talk about bail reform.
Yeah.
Well, how is it possible that a guy who tried to murder a Chicago police officer at point blank range got bond? How is that possible? He got out on $5,000, and now he's home with an electronic monitor that if he walked away from, no one would care. I mean, what is, how does that work? That's the problem. So that's
a wild ride.
Yes, it is. All right. Well, okay. I'm glad we got that all settled.
Yeah. Hey, and by the way, the Dow closed down 1,000. So that's the other piece of cheery news we have for you.
Well, it's funny because we were just supposed to talk to John Najarian. You know him, Dr.
Yes,
J. You see him on television all the time,
yeah,
right?
And love his outfit.
He was in Las Vegas, and I think he was actually standing on the roof of one of the hotels
crying.
Right. And we were just
put
trying,
it all on black.
No. He's like, oh, wait. Now, don't do it.
Whatever
don't
I have
jump.
Left, put it on 00.
Yeah. So we lost him before the interview actually took place.
Oh,
that's too bad. But you know what? I don't. You know, as a percentage here, you always have to look at the percentages, mm-hmm. Ben. I learned this a long time ago. I always look at the percentages. And it's 1/30th, right, is basically what was lost here today. So it's not exact. It's, I mean, that's a number. You don't want anything over 1. You don't want a movement over 1% anymore. Or 2%, that's pretty bad. Over 3%, which is just slightly over. Now, you know, now you're sort of getting into some territory that make people nervous. But ultimately, it's unless this continues, unless we start to see these gigantic moves where it's $800,000 a day, mm-hmm. 8 points a day, like it was back in 2008, then, you know, people will start to hit the panic button. But we'll figure out what the actual, we have a coronavirus conversation too coming up today, because that's the other piece.
Yeah.
I mean, other than me having it, which is, I think, you know, I think I got it in, you know, on traveling overseas. Yeah. I was really worried about this. I called my doctor.
Can we just set aside all tomorrow at this time to talk about our overseas adventure together?
Yes, because we were overseas a week and a half ago, mm-hmm. and together for 40 hours. And I was just so afraid because I got this Friday night. I started to feel not so great. And so, like right at the 5-day mark, right?
And Roe rolling into foreign travel thinking he might be a little sick.
Okay, now
is
wait.
A treat.
Now hold. Now here was the best part, though. So now I'm texting my doctor.
Right.
Like on Saturday morning, I'm like, I don't think that.
And
I'm not
your doctor
really
responds,
good.
New phone, who dis?
Right. Exactly. Well, have you traveled outside the country? And I'm like, oh no, oh no, 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 no. I wanted to lie. I'm like, we weren't anywhere where the coronavirus is.
As we're at immigration, I'm like, I'm totally going to tell the customs guy that the guy behind me has been sneezing, woozing, and we were just in China.
He just got.
Hey,
just,
Ro, you're next.
He
come
just
on up.
Took a flight from Beijing to Guatemala City as a connector back to O'Hare.
So that's tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
Looking forward to it.
Appreciate it.
I will dust off stories and photos.
Oh boy. Yeah, you might. Let me just say this: if you might want to tune in back here tomorrow, it's probably both Ben and my last day. once we tell the story of where we were and what we did.
Yes,
and I learned something too. There was actually a shooting where we were.
Yes, we learned that the hard way.
Yes, we there was an incident at this blessed event. We were at a wedding. There was an incident at this wedding. We heard a shot ring out. It was a very famous person getting married, and we're like, oh, that must be somebody dropping a tray. It wasn't. We'll tell you what it was tomorrow at this very time. Come back. You're gonna want to hear it.
Thank you, Ben.
We'll see you on the WGN TV News starting at 4. Let's talk now with the WGN TV News person Kim Gordon. Radio news right now. Ro Khan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, there's a storm heading our way. That is true. Demetrius Ivory is going to tell us the details here, and I'm going to remain calm, Demetrius. Don't worry about it. I'm all good.
I'm hoping you. Now, hey, you were warned, right? I mean, we
you did
about this
last
morning?
Week warn us after you said it's going to be in the upper 40s, low 50s on Saturday, and then low to mid 50s on Sunday, and you were dead on. You got it exactly right. Mm-hmm. And then you said, oh, but there might be a significant weather makers, snow makers, storm heading our way in the middle of next week.
Yes.
And now it appears that you're right about that, too. Would you like to do a victory lap before you tell us about it? Would you just to tell us about it?
No, let's talk about the stock market.
Okay. Right, I know. What's worse today, right? All right, so let's discuss. We're the stock market, by the way, coming up in about 7 minutes. We're going to talk about that. Just thank you for the tease.
Thank you.
All right, what do we got?
So we have a winter storm watch, and, you know, the watches and warnings are going to start to, you know, get all over the place. The question is, how much snow are we expecting, and when is it going to start? We're expecting rain. As a matter of fact, we're already seeing a lot of drizzle across the region. Rain tonight, which will gradually change over to snow. When we make the complete changeover is a question. If it happens early during the, I say, overnight, sometime after midnight, we're looking at more snow. If tomorrow morning you're driving to work and it's still mixing with rain, not so much sticky. sticking, then probably less snow. But then tomorrow, we're going to see snow basically increasing and strengthening with each hour, as our highs are only going to be in the low 30s. Even if a few degrees above freezing, that's still cold enough for you to have snow. And the snow is going to be heaviest Tuesday night into Wednesday. Maybe as early as Tuesday rush hour commute. I think that's probably going to be another one of our epic parking lot routines. But And and the heaviest of the snow is going to come there Tuesday night into Wednesday. All in all, in the city, we got between 4 and 8 inches of snow. Okay, it's a pause for you.
And I'm just taking it in.
North of the city, so as you get north of Highland Park, near the state line, 2 to 4 inches.
Oh,
so not much.
So more to the south?
Yes, how about that? The south will lose again. That's it continues to be like this for...
Well, it's been good news most of the time. But all right, so what is what's going to happen like around I-80?
Around I-80, as you get into northwest Indiana, maybe 8 to 10 is going to be the total. Now, that is, we're going to kind of nickel and dime with some lake effect snow probably Wednesday there. So, you know, the system snow, 4 to 8 inches, I'd say Chicago or maybe O'Hare and all points south. But then we get the lake effect snow, which is going to add another couple of inches there, and that's going to be more kind of a Wednesday daytime thing. Probably not in the city, but probably in northwest Indiana. That'll bring them to that total. So,
okay, got it.
Yeah.
So tomorrow, what you're saying is getting out of the city, because the snow will have started and it's just going to increase every hour. So by the time we get to 2-3 o'clock, where the beginning of the rush hour starts, that's where it's going to pack in heavy.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, there are more accidents actually when there's 2 or less inches of snow. And I think it's just because if it's anything more than that, people either stay home or just slow to heck
down. Slow down. Yeah.
Yeah. So I that's what I think we'll be looking at around there. We'll be looking at probably the 1 to 2 inch, maybe in some areas, 3 inches of snow, kind of on the ground, road crews out there trying, but everybody driving home. It's just going to be a really slow drive.
So take a train tomorrow.
Take a train tomorrow, and I'd say Wednesday morning also. And for all the kids, and let's face it, administrators who actually want it more, looking for the school closings, I don't think it's going to even be possible until you get across at least southern Cook County. You know, Midway and all points south, you got a shot. But north and west of O'Hare, probably not.
Oh, no. I there's some school administrators that if it's windy outside, they're, we're gonna close the school.
That is another thing. It's going to be windy late tonight. I think I'm glad you said that. It's going to be windy late tonight and tomorrow night. So the snow that we're going to see, remember, it's the heaviest of the snow. And we're talking 40-mile-per-hour wind gusts. So it's just going to be nasty out there Tuesday night into Wednesday.
Demetrius Ivory, WGN-TV Weather, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
When's it going to melt?
It will not melt. I don't have it melt. We're not going to climb above freezing until Sunday, probably about noonish. So, you know, that's above freezing. So, you know, probably not till next week.
We got some solar though. We can have sunny skies.
We are going to have sunny skies coming our way, but you know, Saturday sunny, 28, Friday, Thursday, Friday sunny, mid 20s. It's just
going to get solar evaporation. You get that. Look, I'll take anything right now.
Yeah.
You got this high sun angle. You get that tends to knock those piles down. That's the issue.
It does, but for some of it, it just hardens them. You know, makes them kind of veteran. They just get tougher, right?
They get icy. What's it looking like in the long range format forecast for next week?
Well, right now it's looking like Monday we're in the low 40s, so the trend is to go up.
Okay.
So you know we're probably Tuesday. I expect mid 40s unless we get a storm that comes our way. But the trend is to go up. So after this snow, it's a good old fashioned winter system where we get the system and then we're going to get the cold temperatures, but not bitterly cold. Mid-20s for highs Thursday right. and Friday.
It's almost March, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Figure this is winter's last gasp is what I like to say. Now, how about that for being optimistic? Winter's last gasp.
I don't say that until sometime in June.
I know. I know you don't. But I will say that because I'm just making myself feel better. No one's going to call me on the carpet for being wrong about this.
And this is one of those things for us where either way, depending upon where the email comes from, they're either going to love us or hate us, because I put out a tweet a minute ago that said snowfall forecast 1 to 10 inches, no problem. And there will be folks who get 1 inch in Lake County and say, you said it would be a big storm. And then there are going to be other folks who get 10 inches in Lake County, Indiana, and they say, you said 1 inch, or you know, you
right.
said it wasn't so
there
big.
You go.
Yeah, there it is. It's all part of the, you know.
Thank you, Demetrius Ivory.
Appreciate it.
See you on the WGN-TV News coming up at 4 o'clock.
Sell.
Yes, that's what I'm here for. Let's check in now with Lauren Lapko. What's happening in the skies and on the roads? Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, keep listening after 4:30. Your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Hawks take on the Edmonton Oilers Thursday, March 5th. That's a week from Thursday. Courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of Blackhawks tickets from Four Seasons. That is coming your way after 4:30 today. All right? Got it right there. All right, let's figure out exactly what just happened to your 401k. Our 401k. All of our 401ks. Craig Balanos is with us right now, and he is, and don't tell me, Craig, I have it right here, CEO and founding partner, Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. The coronavirus seems to be the blame here for the Dow going down 1,000 points, about 3.5 points earlier today. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow?
Wow. Well, I tell you what, if I had my wish, what I am hoping is tomorrow morning when we open, the market's going to get hammered again. I would be actually reassured, contrary to popular belief, if the market opened down and then we saw recovery as the day went on. And there's a good chance that can happen because this coronavirus, on top of other things that are happening, is so newsworthy. I think people are going to get into a little bit of a panic, not necessarily like the end of 2018, but it feels similar. And actually, I'm hoping we can actually settle people down so they don't make a bad mistake coming into tomorrow's trading action.
So set people up for another dive tomorrow, right? Because
yep.
The headlines today are the Dow gave up all of the year's gains so far, but the year is only 2 months old. So, all right, we'll take that. The bigger issue is people looking at their 401ks or their investment plans or whatever it happens to be. It's all on your computer. It's on your phone. You can take a look at it. You can look at your net worth 15 times a day if you want to do that or more. And a lot of people do. Most people in your business don't want people doing that all day long because you get a lot of phone calls, and especially on a day like today. So as you look at 401ks, and break it down for me by age groups, would you? So people who are just starting out in the 401ks, this is like not a very big deal, right?
Well, you know what, Ro? That's wicked smart. I like what you said. Let's break it down by age group as you suggest. So if I may, let's just go with the younger investors in your 20s and 30s. And I'm not saying that what's happening now is not significant if you're in your 20s and 30s, but the truth is, I think if you're in your 20s and 30s, your savings rate is that much more important than the actual rate of return on the S&P 500 on any given day of the week. So the reality is,
how much you're socking away is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's how much you're socking away, because, you know, thinking about this, you know, since you gave me the idea of doing it in ages, you know, if we just have someone who's just out of their, you know, just out of college, they're in their first job, maybe they've put away some amount of money. If that money declines 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%, well, you know, losing 10% on 10,000, it hurts, but it's not the end of the world. And
right.
If you can just be focusing,
it'll come back.
Yeah, it's going to bounce back. But more importantly, if you think about it, if you had a $10,000 balance that dropped 10%, you lose $1,000. I think it's more important for that young person to be concentrating on funding $6,000 a year into that IRA, because it's going to move the needle so much more. So, yes, young people shouldn't be panicking. And who doesn't want to buy things when they're on sale?
Right.
I like to. I'm sure you like to as well.
Not really. I've been accused of having to pay full price all the time. But that's the point, is that when stocks do drop like this, there could be incredible values ahead. But let's continue on with the IRAs, though. That's the most important thing, and we can talk about individual stocks eventually, maybe. So, all right. So for the bulk of people with IRAs prior to retirement, 40s and 50s, as they're looking at it, is it especially the closer, the more they get to a retirement age, should they be freaked out today?
Well, I think, you know, if you're in your 40s and 50s, since you selected those ages, my thoughts are most people are still going to be 10, 12, 15 years from retirement. And if history is my guide and it's the only guide I have, that's always been more than enough ample time to ride out anything bad that could occur. And that doesn't mean people should just sit blindly by and watch prices cascade downwards. But I think if you're in your 40s or 50s, we've got to introduce another discussion, which is a lot of 35 people, I'm in that age band row, we're not just investing for our retirement, we're investing for things like our kids' college money. I got one in college, one heading to college. So if people take one action item from our conversation today in their 40s or 50s, they ought to look at their 529 savings plans, any of those investments they have earmarked for their kids' college, and make sure they're not too far over their skis just in case things do the unexpected and get an awful lot worse.
All right, so people of retirement age who are concerned about what the value of their 401k is if they're drawing out of it?
Well, I think that's a big deal because losses in retirement are devastating because the time is no longer on your side. And again, the only way anybody gets injured when they're investing is if they have to sell when prices are low. So what I would challenge everybody listening right now to do is sit back and say, hey, whatever happened just happened. The market's up gigantic since the Great Recession of 08-09. Right. And if you are at or in retirement and you don't have 2, 3, 4 years of safe money tucked away somewhere, I would encourage people to go ahead and raise some cash because that's what you need, not just to get retired, but to stay retired. You got to have enough safety in the form of dry powder.
So so people in their 60s right now or their 70s who are deciding, okay, do I have to ride this out? Should I keep everything in equities? In a moment like this, Craig Balanos, who I should mention your company again, CEO and founding partner, Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove, is this you say take cash out, but that's the sort of attitude that's going to continue to drop the market, is it not?
Well, again, my cash out is this. You know, if somebody's investing, and let's look at what's happened. The market has just created new high after new high after new high, and investors in retirement, if they have a large portion of their stocks, money in stocks, they probably have a higher percentage in stocks than they've ever had. A lot of people I'm meeting are finding out that they're way more exposed to the stock market than they plan to be. And it's for those investors that I say, listen, you need to stay in the game because you have to continue to grow your capital in retirement. But if you find yourself not sleeping at night or you find yourself looking at your statements and saying, you know what? Where's my money going to come from for the next 2, 3 years if things were to get really bad? If you don't have that cash available, now is as good of time ever to raise a little bit of that cash just to make sure you're not forced to sell if prices go lower in the future.
Well, Craig Balanos, let's talk about what just happened here, though. It appears to be, this is not based on fundamentals necessarily in the market. It's based on the event of the coronavirus. And the event of the coronavirus, it is assumed, and even by the World Health Organization, that is now looking at this as a potential pandemic. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the program. But is this it seems to be almost a seasonal, at least that's what a lot of analysts are looking at. Even the president last week said that, yeah, by the spring it'll be okay. I'm not sure I agree with that. But if this is just an event curve as opposed to an actual fundamentals curve. But an event curve could make a fundamentals curve eventually, right?
No, you're correct. It could be a self-induced prophecy. I don't want to see that happen. But I just draw on what's occurred in the last 20 years. We had SARS. We had avian flu. We had MERS. We had Ebola. We had Zika. Now we got the corona. And the reality is, during all of those previous issues, you saw this market lose anywhere between 5 and roughly 13%. Well, guess what? We're already down 5. We probably have a little bit more damage left to go, but in all those other previous conditions, with at least 3 of those being strains of influenza that mutated, not that dissimilar to corona, right. I think at the end of the day, the market bounced back in every scenario because the underlying economy was strong. We have those same fundamentals in place, so it would be foolish for me to believe that the probabilities do not suggest that this too will pass, but I think we have a little bit more pain left to go before we end up riding the ship.
All right, Craig, I got 1 minute left. Are there sectors that people should think about investing in, safe harbor sectors?
Well, you know what I'm looking at right now is if you look at what's been doing so well, you got the backdrop of TINA, there is no alternative, with interest rates so low that's going to continue to push money into stocks. And then when you look at stock sectors, as you indicate, you've got another acronym, I call it Big Mo, the big momentum plays, large tech, et cetera. I still think that even though that's at risk with some of the big companies that are out there, Apple in particular warned about this last week, you have to continue continue to focus on those technology momentum plays, because I think that's where the money is going to continue to go to, because investors want revenue growth, they want earnings growth, and when you look at all the sectors in the marketplace with what's happening right now, you can find more easily revenue and earnings growth inside the momentum plays, aka big tech. So if I'm creating a shopping list this afternoon, that's probably where I'm starting.
All right. It's a little, safe, little bit of safe harbor, you'd think. Are there, what about financial instruments? Anything?
Oh, in terms of financial instruments, yeah. You know, right now I can't get excited about financial stocks because of something called net interest margin.
Right.
That's another conversation. But I do think everybody should really just focus and take a look again. There's nothing wrong with some high-yield savings accounts, money market, CDs, et cetera.
There you go.
That's a place to be.
All right. Craig Balanos, thank you very much. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again. Founding partner, Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
And his phone's ringing off the hook. We will be back here with the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2 minutes.
The live and local sound of Radio Chicago, 720 WGN.
Rob Kahn Show, right here, 720 WGN. We're joined by Aaron Katursky, ABC News in New York, where the Harvey Weinstein trial, we talked last week, Aaron, about this, and there were many legal experts who believe that Harvey Weinstein may not have gotten convicted in this particular trial, but in fact he was on two of the counts, but that's not the, those weren't all the counts, right?
No, he was convicted of two of five, but he was convicted of the primary offenses that he was accused of, namely forcing oral sex on a production assistant named Mimi Haley and of raping Jessica Mann, who was an aspiring actress at the time in 2013. And what the jury acquitted him of was the enhanced charge of predatory sexual assault that prosecutors added later to try to show a pattern of behavior that would have exposed Weinstein to the possibility of a life sentence.
And the Mann case particularly was one that legal experts were dubious about because she went on to have a relationship with him, a consensual relationship with him afterwards.
And that's what prosecutors said doesn't matter here. It was certainly an opening for the defense, but the district attorney, Cy Vance, was particularly keen to point out that this maybe signals a different era, that you can be raped and you can still have a consensual relationship with someone. And the jury believed her, ultimately, he said. So even though it was a complex and rather complicated set of circumstances, and there was no forensic evidence, they win this conviction, and now Harvey Weinstein is potentially going to prison for up to 25 years.
There's still a Los Angeles case, though, right? He still has to go to California and stand trial.
That's right. And after the after he is sentenced formally on March 11th, Harvey Weinstein will head out to California, we believe, to face the similar charges, rape and sexual assault, that involve back-to-back alleged attacks in 2013 during Oscars week.
So will he, if he gets 25 years in New York, I wonder if California will continue to go after him.
You know, I believe they will. I don't know that they want to just drop charges, even if they're satisfied with the sentence here. I mean, the LH case was announced as Weinstein's trial began. I don't know if it was seen as, you know, an insurance policy. But let's see. You know, the LA case seems very similar in terms of pattern and practice. You know, rape, sexual assault, back-to-back nights. Harvey Weinstein clearly had an incredible appetite, and the way prosecutors portrayed him, he would just dispose of women as he saw fit.
Yeah. All right. Well, as expected, as expected, that this trial, the jury came back today because there was a question on Friday, and then they came back around, and it seemed as though they were heading toward, in that question on Friday, they were heading toward a decision that would be a conviction, because the question actually came in that form, like, you know, how do we convict him? You know, what time? What do we need to if we want to convict him now, what do we do? Is essentially what the note said, but there was a question about some of the procedure. It is interesting. I just wanted, before we let you go, Aaron Katursky, ABC News, those three charges that he wasn't convicted of, what were those?
That he wasn't convicted of involved predatory sex assault. This is the enhanced charge that would have exposed him to the possibility of a life sentence, and it involved the account of the two underlying accusers, but then also the account of Annabella Sciorra, the Sopranos actress. And she had said that she was raped and sexually attacked by Harvey Weinstein on separate occasions in the mid-1990s. And what we don't know, since we haven't heard from jurors yet, is whether they just didn't believe Annabella Sciorra or whether they don't like the idea of going back and using other accusers to bolster the main charges. So we're just not sure. But we had thought all along that Sciorra's account was gripping. I mean, she spoke in emotional and you know, gave incredible detail about what she said happened, down to the, you know, what she was wearing at the time. But we don't know whether jurors just didn't believe what she was saying or didn't like this idea of piling on.
Well, however, it breaks out now. Harvey Weinstein guilty of two counts in this, and two of the toughest counts, right? At least one of them was one that people didn't think they were going to get, that the lawyers, at least, were telling anybody who would listen, right? The pundit lawyers on television were saying, well, this is that he's probably the man case, he's probably going to be exonerated from, but he was not. He was convicted of that as well. So, Aaron Katursky, ABC News in New York. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. So there you go. Be interesting to see what happens now if they do move him to California to stand trial there, and how many years they actually give him. I mean, it's up to 25 in New York, but let's say that they give him 10 in New York, and then California will definitely want to try him. It does appear Harvey Weinstein, who is not in the best health when you see him, at least he's portraying himself as not in the best health. He's, you know, he's coming in a walker and oxygen and all those kinds of things that you're going to see really amped up during sentencing. You're not going to see him ever on his own two feet in public between now and sentencing in New York. Between now and then, I think there will be a lot more action in California. So just look out for that. Let's check in now with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and in the skies?
They're Chicago and they're real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, and Robin Baumgarten get real in the morning with the WGN-TV Morning News Team weekdays 4 to 10. Must watch.
It's incredibly intense. Bodie has just stepped into the studio with us. Let's talk a little bit about the Blackhawks trade here. These are big stories today. The big story. We're expecting a trade. We were expecting, I thought, a bigger trade than this.
Well, yeah, everyone was kind of thinking that Eric Gustafson was definitely going to go. You were at the game Friday night. They healthy scratched him so he wouldn't get injured as as a trade guy. And then they kept
right, exactly.
On.
They didn't want to get him hurt before.
And they ended up getting, sounds like, that is confirmed by the Blackhawks so far, that they did receive a third-round draft pick from Calgary in exchange for Gustafson, who was going to be a free agent. Basically, his role here over the last couple of years, and he had a great year last year, but you know, not nearly as good this year. His role is basically going to be filled by Adam Boqvist in the future, and maybe another young defenseman or so who will join the team. The other one is the Robin Leonard one. That has not been confirmed by the Blackhawks, but Robin Leonard has confirmed it through Twitter, saying, "Thanks, Chicago. It was great being with you. Outstanding fans. Love the team. Great, great bunch of guys. Wish you all the best of luck. Again, love my time in Chicago. Looking forward to going to the Vegas Golden Knights." And this is a Vegas team that a lot of people had pegged to be one of the favorites for the Stanley Cup, had not been playing well up until the last couple of weeks, but now they are. And it brings an interesting situation because Marc-Andre Fleury is their three-time Stanley Cup winning goalie. Mm-hmm. He is their number one guy. They've had trouble with the backup named Malcolm Subban, who apparently is coming to
Chicago,
the Blackhawks, in exchange, and Robin will be a free agent after the year. So
is that a Subban, by the way?
That is a Subban.
It's another brother?
Yeah. That's
what's going on in that Subban family? You know, this is like the Sudines, you know? They just keep pumping them out.
Right. P.K. Subban, he's with New Jersey now. He's started out Montreal, then Nashville. And Malcolm is his younger brother, who was a first-round draft pick of the Bruins, I think in 2014, just hasn't gotten his game going at the NHL level, and Vegas really needed that to rest Fleury, and so that's one of the commodities coming in return in exchange for Leonard, who's, as we said, is a free agent after this year.
So are we assuming that he's going to be the Hawks' backup?
Well, we're waiting. the trade deadline passed 2 hours and 19 minutes ago, and we're still waiting to hear from Stan exactly what the plans are for Malcolm Subban, because Colin Dealey is down in the minors, and Kevin Lankinen, this kid who had performed well. The Blackhawks are pretty well set in terms of goalies in the pipeline. Subban will be a free agent after this year. So the bigger questions here are whether the door is still open for Leonard to return, or whether what prompted this trade was early negotiations with Leonard thinking, okay, there's no way we're going to get a deal with him now or in the summer.
Mr. Bowden, either. I think you and I had a conversation about a month and a half ago that it appeared that when they were going to make a move before the trade deadline, that there was going to be a goalie move, and they were trying to sign Leonard to a longer-term deal because they only had him under control for the rest of this year.
Right.
And then the idea was that Corey would go and Leonard would stay. Well, the exact opposite happened. So Leonard didn't like the money? Is that what we're to assume here?
Yeah, and we're waiting to see what Stan's answer to that question is. There have been reports out there that he may have wanted minimum five, no movement clauses, $6 to $8 million a year. And basically, he's earned that salary, no matter how long the term is, but other factors as well. And, you know, the Blackhawks will still be a bit cash strapped salary cap wise going into next year. And, so we're waiting to see whether Stan made a stab at Robin and figured it wasn't going to be working. And this is the younger goalie who probably could bring more in return than Corey would on the market. And or whether that door remains to be open for Robin to potentially return in the offseason. Where things stand as they kind of break up here.
Bowden is our Blackhawks expert, and that's why we're talking.
I wouldn't go that far.
No, you are.
But now there have been reports that...
Pre and post game.
There have been reports again now since the trade that Leonard was willing to take shorter term and less money in order to stay in Chicago. So... Who do you believe? That's what it's become here.
I believe no one now.
No.
No.
Anyone in the world.
No. I watch Homeland. I'm not allowed to believe anybody. Where does this go here? Is this? I don't want to call this exactly a white flag trade, but there was a moment where some of the big stars could have gotten moved here and would have given you some salary cap relief, would have given you some ability to be a little more flexible and build up, because the chances of them making the playoffs, I mean, if you look at those stat lines, I hate those things now, like on every website, okay, the Hawks are about 3% to make the playoffs.
The worst thing that happened to them was the bye week. You know, they were playing so well going into the bye week, then they're off for 10 days, haven't been the same team since then. And I'm just, no inside knowledge in particular, but I'm just of the opinion that Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane will never go anywhere as long as their playing careers are going on. They're going to be Blackhawks. They're up in 3 years. Duncan Keith is up in 3 years as well.
I would have seen Duncan Keith get moved, but I don't know that you get for him.
Maybe that could have been a situation where he was approached because he also needs permission to be traded. Stan recently denied that he approached him last year about this, and probably wasn't of the mind to approach him this year about being moved until these last 2 or 3 weeks, if that ever crossed his mind. And I don't know if Duncan's particularly ready to make that move. I think if there was a as big a name as Leonard moved at the deadline, it perhaps would have been Brandon Saad, who was one more year and has been playing really well this year, but he's going to be paid, you know, $6 million next year. And all these puzzle pieces financially, once again, that the Blackhawks are going to have to figure out.
But they could do that in the offseason, though, too.
They can. They can. And the relief they would have gotten now with Seabrook and DeHaan on long term, that's $11 million of salary they could have brought in for the rest of the season.
It's a lot of math.
At this point.
Chris, there was supposed to be no math in this.
No. Yeah. No. Believe me, I tried to.
I just want to know who the personalities are and where they're moving here. And so, Leonard, okay, I'm okay with this. I was very afraid. I said on Friday when we were at the United Center, right at the end of the show, the thought was that, you know, by the time we reconvene here on Monday, that maybe that decades-long star chamber of the Blackhawks, that some of those pieces would be missing, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting dedication, I think, that the Blackhawks organization has to wanting to continue to sell the core product and just put other ornaments on the tree, if you will. Now, the interesting thing is that the two-headed hockey goalie monster, Hydra, you know, that they wanted to build here with two starting goalies, that didn't work.
Right, and that's because of the way they broke it down in other areas. What would this team be like if they were in the middle of the pack on the power play this year? They're dead last. Where would they be if you know, for the first 2 months of the season, again, they had trouble defending their own zone? You know,
yeah.
So, all right. And it was that two-headed monster that kept them in it as long as they have. So hopefully we'll hear from Stan here soon. We'll get some answers about whether, you know, there's any possibility of the door reopening for Robin, whether Corey might be the guy here for a couple more years as he's up as well. While, you know,
he's up this game.
He's also an unrestricted free agent this year.
After this year.
So both guys.
So They could be goalie-less.
They and could
I,
be.
I don't
they
think PK Subban's little brother is going to be the answer here.
No.
It's not my guess.
I don't think so. He hasn't been the answer in his two other stops anywhere. He's 26 years old.
Oh,
so
God.
Far.
No, that's awful the way you said that. Chris Bowden, that just makes me feel terrible about this. It must be, though. I mean, you know, Corey Crawford's been treated very well by this team,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's treated the team very well.
He's been playing really well here lately,
yes.
too. 35 or not, you know?
Yeah.
So he may be earning himself another short, you know, 1 or 2 year deal here to be the guy. And, you know, whether it's Malcolm Subban or Colin Dealey or Kevin Lankinen down in the minors, whether those are the guys as the backup role. We'll
see. I'd like to understand these families that send all their children. Like that catcher family in baseball that, you know, every single one of them went off to they raised little catchers and
right.
then they, you know, they just became there's like three of them playing it at one time. The same thing with the Sedin sisters. Right. I mean, that was the
right.
they were always in. And now the Subans.
The Subans.
What? I think.
Imagine what the six Sutter brothers were like. Back
right.
in the day.
The Sutter. I forgot about the Sutter brothers.
What about the Stalls?
The Stalls. Right. There's a bunch of them. Right. Mm-hmm. There's the Nord. What is the other one with the unpronounceable name? Where there's two of them, Nystrom, which is the one? Anyway,
Nylander.
Nylander. That's what I'm trying. Insecure. The Nylanders, right? So I'm not.
Are these parents just looking to get their kids out of the house, or are they really striving for them to become hockey stars?
I'm in
a billet family.
I'm in the NHL. What I'm doing is I'm going to try to build. I'm going to get genetic material combined
right.
and start to be.
We're going to store them all at the Swiss Hotel right across the street here.
Nicking. They're going to make them in test tubes now. This is a little bit of Subban, a little bit of Nylander.
The future of the NHL, ladies
yeah,
and gentlemen.
Exactly. It's like Westworld. That's exactly what I'm anticipating.
Trademark it,
yeah.
bro.
I'm thinking about all of these things, Bodie. Chris Bowden, our Blackhawks expert, that's the wrong way of saying it. But, you know, he's always on the radio around the Blackhawks. And once we hear from Stan Bowman, the general manager, he'll come back and tell us what he said.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very
Sounds
much, good. Chris right. Bowden,
Thanks.
WGN Radio. We've got the news from the WGN Radio Newsroom, Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, in 2 minutes. Keep listening. After 4:30, your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Chicago Blackhawks, your beloved Chicago Blackhawks, against the Edmonton Oilers. Robin Leonard will not be there, but that's all right. We're going to have a Subban, at least dressed. That's going to be on Thursday, March 5th, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and tune in every Monday, all season long, for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks. Take on anybody. All right. Our political analyst is John Fritchie. Unpaid position, unfortunately. Now, John is a longtime state legislator in this fair town. Chicago guy. Grew up in this town. Knows the streets. Understands the politics of all of this. You were there for many of the craziest things over the last two decades that have happened in Springfield and in this town. Would you say that's true?
Yeah. When you look back on it now, it sure is.
Yeah.
Even by our standards.
I would like to, and I want to talk about a couple different things here with you, because we got an election coming up in just a couple of weeks, right? We're 3 weeks out, 3 weeks from tomorrow. I love a St. Patrick's Day election. That's my favorite thing. The nothing screams Chicago like that St. Patrick's Day parade. You're going to have the back-to-back on that Saturday before downtown, that Sunday before Southside Irish Parade, and they're going to be crawling all over each other. Right, the state's attorney's candidates, the people that no one ever heard of, where all of a sudden you're starting to get mailers, right? You're starting to get a big like cardboard thing in your mailbox and with a picture of somebody who's always got their arms around kids.
Of course,
yeah. Saddam Hussein had his arm around kids at the end too. I don't think that necessarily worked.
Well, but early voting that Saturday should be interesting too. The day of the parade.
Oh, right. You're supposed to not be drunk when you go into the polling place, right? Or is there a rule about that?
I've seen people make some bad decisions sober. So
they used to have polling places in bars until the 1950s, and then they thought, well, maybe that's not such a good idea.
Well, actually, you know what? A spot that you and I used to go to every now and then, Club Lucky, was a polling place for years and years, and it may actually still be.
But they won't serve the alcohol during the polling. Isn't that the...
Ish.
Okay. It's Chicago. I'm just going to guess that they're not doing that. I'm just going to guess because I think that that's the right thing to guess. All right. Let's talk about Jussie Smollett for a second here. First of all, you're also an attorney. Tell me your thoughts on Jussie Smollett coming back to Chicago. Interesting circumstance here because his lawyers are saying he's going to take this thing to the mat.
Well, I've got to tell you what, this thing's taken more twists and turns. And, you know, the best thing he could have done, ironically, would have been to cop to it in the beginning.
Sure.
Because, other than to Jussie, I don't know that anybody has any doubt that he made the whole story up. And now it's not just that he made it up. It's he doubled down, then he tripled down. And, you know, now we've got a situation where you're going through court resources again. You're tying up public time. You know, there's attention that could be spent on other places. And, you know, city's involved in a lawsuit. You've got Jussie now facing, six criminal counts of disorderly. And those all carry jail time potentially and a fine. Each count, I think, carries up to about a $25,000 fine.
Be ironic in this moment of bail justice and all the rest of that and letting people out for doing things that he's the one guy who gets 10-year bid in the system.
Right.
Just for being a general mope.
Well, there's a cell that opened up in Colorado. So
wait, hold on. Don't get ahead of that because I want your thoughts on the return of Rob Blagojevich. You knew him very well. So it'll be very interesting to see what your thoughts are. But that's coming up after the break. All right. But I'm Jussie Smollett. He will have to come back and face something, right? He's going to have to keep coming back here. A trial. I mean, in Cook County Court, these things can take a long time. There's guys in county jail that are wait trial for 6 years. If they do, fast track him, then that's sort of against the whole of what they're calling for here.
Well, and, you know, it's a relatively straightforward case at this point. There's a couple of appeals that are going to hold this up. His lawyers are arguing that it would be double jeopardy. Saying that you're charging him again for essentially the same act, but it doesn't really apply.
But it doesn't apply.
It doesn't apply in a case like this, in my opinion, because he didn't go to trial. He didn't enter a plea.
Right.
So I think that goes by the wayside. Then the interesting aspect of this, too, is that they are saying that the special prosecutor who has charged him this time was improperly appointed because the state's attorney's office never formally recused themselves, despite what Kim Fox had said at the time. You know, if you're the state's attorney, You can't just recuse yourself. Recuse your entire office.
Right.
And that didn't happen here. So they're challenging the validity of the appointment of Dan Webb, which is actually an interesting call. I don't know where
because
it goes at the end
actually,
of the day.
Actually, it's interesting because it would be an appeal that could be won because the state's attorney's office screwed up.
Screwed up would be putting it mildly.
I'd use an F, but that's the thing. That would be the ultimate mistake by them in this, that they couldn't even they would have to drop the whole thing because they didn't even properly figure out how to handle their own business. And it was very clear to me that they did not know what they were doing. You were in the state attorney general's office. You didn't work in the Cook County State's Attorney's office, but it's a similar kind of concept. It's a lot of lawyers working for, you know, it's government lawyers working either to prosecute people or to handle civil things. This Cook County State's Attorney's Office is huge. There's a lot of lawyers. There are a lot of layers. There's a lot of bureaucracy. I am just amazed that there's some really good people over there, the careerists at the top levels. They couldn't do their job. In my opinion, based on what I know about this, they weren't able to do their job. And they weren't able to get through to the current Cook County State's Attorney to say, look, we can't do it this way.
Well, and the fundamental issue when it comes to recusing yourself is, you know, this is a situation where they either knew or should have known that this wasn't a recusal. You know, that if she said, I'm recusing myself, then that whole office has to be like, okay, we're out.
Right.
We can get a special prosecutor, kick it out to DuPage, whatever it may be.
So I think DuPage wanted it.
So somebody in the chain of command had to say, no, that's not how a recusal works.
Right.
And the biggest issue now, one of the biggest issues, the next court date for the Smollett case is March 18th, the day after the primary. So, you know, Kim Fox is going to have to live with this one through the duration of the election.
Right. Well, maybe better. than actually the day before. All right, well, come back. I want to talk about the politics of that because Election Day is right around the corner and the return of Rob Blagojevich. And what does that mean for Cook County and Illinois Democrats? You used to be both of those. All right, hold on 1 second. Here is Lauren Lapka. She's got the traffic and the weather. Rokan Show, right here, 720 WGN. John Fritchie, the Honorable John Fritchie, is with us. Used to be a state representative here, and he was a long-time politician down in Springfield. Public servant, I'm sorry. Did I say politician? I didn't really mean it. And he's also, I think it should be mentioned, becoming a bit of a political pundit for things like this, because the truth of the matter is that you grew up in this as a child. You had your family was in politics and public service and all that, and you worked your way through seeing your way through that. And so you basically have 5 decades on the eyes of what has happened here. It should be noted. So, as just quickly, the only big race coming up in 3 weeks from tomorrow is the state attorney's race. That's the only sort of countywide thing that people are interested in. And you've got Kim Fox, the incumbent, who's Tony Preckwinkle, the president of the county board's handpicked person. You've got Bob Fioretti, longtime alderman, and he runs for everything now. If there's an opening, he goes. Donna Moore, who is an attorney in private practice, but at one point was in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, her second time doing this. And Bill Conway, who's a newcomer to this, who is a kid who was in Naval Reserve. He was a city kid. He actually went to the same high school that you and I went to. He's been an attorney in private practice, and he's going to take it. But he had been in the states. He'd been in the office prior to that, Cook County State Attorney's Office. So those are your players here. Now, Kim Fox has got a problem because she's got the Jussie Smollett anchor, right? That she's carrying around with her. But she also has this justice reform issue. And you say that's a double-edged sword.
Well, it is a double-edged sword. And listen, I've been doing criminal justice reform work for almost 20 years from my time in the legislature and on the Cook County Board. You know, it's a critical issue, and it's great that it's taking the forefront that it has. But it is a double-edged sword because communities of color and communities, you know, white communities on the north side and northwest and southwest sides, you know, they're both impacted by this when you're seeing offenders that are going through a revolving door back into the streets to reoffend. That creates problems in the communities where they come from. And now you see a lot of people that formed Kim's base in the first time around, you know, lakefront progressives, folks like that. All of a sudden, when they start seeing more and more stories about carjackings, shootings, robberies, smash and grabs happening in Lincoln Park, on Michigan Avenue, et cetera.
Right. Now, in their neighborhoods.
Now, granted, it's relative to what you're seeing on the south and west side and what these folks have had to live with for a long time. But all of a sudden, you know, if you're a progressive, you become a little bit less progressive and start saying, hey, we want to crack down on these folks. And so now you've lost Kim, State Attorney Fox's kind of main thrust here. So you have that coupled with the Jussie Smollett stuff coming back in the news at a terrible time for her. And, you know, it's a perfect storm for, I won't even call it an upset at this point. You know, that race is a toss-up. Conway's gotten a lot of momentum. He's had the resources to be on television for a while now, and he's going to stay up in the air. And, you know, you were seeing a state's attorney's race that is having millions and millions of dollars spent. And I would say right now that the trend is behind Conway. Time is not Kim Fox's friend right now. And, you know, for the folks that are anti-Fox, it'll be interesting to see what happens. You look at Moore and Fioretti, they're both polling around 4, 5, 6%, yeah, right in that range. Point blank, you know, and I know them both, neither one of them can win this race. If somebody doesn't want Kim Fox and they decide that they want to vote for somebody else, if these Fioretti and Moore supporters realize that their person's not going to win and they go to Conway, you know, this is, you know, it's trouble for Fox.
So you got to walk away for him. It's interesting you mentioned the North Side and downtown, all these places where condominium prices are high, and you got a lot of people living together, and this whole idea that Rahm Emanuel, when he was mayor of Chicago, would point to the fact that even though the population of Chicago was decreasing year by year by year, the average income in Chicago was going up, 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 and up because people were coming to Chicago for these high-tech jobs. If you're somebody from some other part of the world and you come to Chicago and you get a job that pays you, you know, close to six figures or over six figures or whatever it happens to be, and you end up moving downtown or into Lincoln Park or Gold Coast or any of those places, it's a totally different city. than people see out in the neighborhoods, specifically in the really troubled neighborhoods, the crime-ridden neighborhoods in the South and West Side, right? Totally different world. And those kids who are in those neighborhoods, in that world, never see what downtown is. You know, I mean, we just did a charity event for this group of business leaders who are going out into those neighborhoods, and they're trying to grab kids who are doing well in school and bring them in for internships to downtown so they can see downtown, or they can see businesses in the suburbs, and they can get a sense of, you know, what the world is outside of their geographic boundary that they're afraid or incapable of coming out of economically. So that's been one of the great hopes, to be able to make a change there. Here's the issue. That once the crime that is associated with those neighborhoods, and again, it's mostly now carjackings, that's a predatory thing, right? It's not really, there are carjackings in bad neighborhoods, but it's, you know, it's a short-term carjacking just so you got a car to shoot somebody with, out of. But this, and that may be the same case here, but to come down and you're noticing it's higher-end cars, it is on the streets of right around the Central Business District and the most expensive real estate in Chicago.
Well, and these things aren't just happening at 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning. No, they're happening at 7 in the evening,
right.
1 in the afternoon. Same thing with the smash and grabs that you're seeing now. You know, it's not only that you really wouldn't see these before, but you're seeing them happen at 11 in the morning on a weekday. And this starts to get people's attention. And like you said, when people come to the city, they have to realize crime happens everywhere, right? And while you may not have as much crime in your neighborhood as there is in another neighborhood, if you start seeing more in your neighborhood generally, you're
going
to pay attention. Yeah. And right now, the blame's got to fall someplace that people aren't as ready to put it on the police as they used to be. But they keep seeing these stories that somebody gets arrested on a gun charge, they're out on bail, or on a no bail, on a signature, and they reoffend when they're out there. I think the Tribune study said that they had, maybe 21 cases of people that are charged with murder right now that were out on other pending cases.
And the attempted murder case, I just keep bringing this up. I'm sorry to keep bringing it up, but it I don't think it can go unnoticed. So each one teach one here. There was it right after Officer Jimenez was shot dead at Mercy Hospital in the fall of 2018, during a response to an active shooter case. The next day, there was a Chicago police officer shot at point-blank range in the back by an offender who was trying to kill him. He survived because he was wearing a vest. The offender goes to county jail, is able to post $5,000 bail in his home on electronic monitoring. Now, I asked Kim Fox about this when she was here. The argument there, well, it's the judges. You know, the judges are the ones that are assessing that are handing down the bail, right? The ones that are calling for the bail. Theoretically, that's true. In the most basic theory case, it's true. In practicality, in reality, it is not the way it goes. There are the Cook County State's Attorney and the public defender or the private lawyer for that person. They come into court and they talk about this. Now, if you have somebody at point blank range trying to kill a cop, is $5,000 enough to keep somebody in? Now, it's not a $50,000 bail, but you have to post 10%, right?
That's right.
So would $1 million bail be more, or $2 million be more? So you have to post $100,000 or $200,000. Doesn't that make more sense? It's if you're going to give them bail, but I mean, there's no reason to let a guy like that out.
Right. And even then, it shouldn't just be an economic test. And that's what we had talked about at the beginning of this criminal justice reform efforts was it shouldn't be a means test. So don't keep somebody behind bars because they're too poor to post bail.
Right.
But the issue is some people shouldn't even be bail qualified. You know, if it's unlawful use of a weapon, something along those lines, you know, the argument on bail, are they a risk to society? Are they a flight risk? If they're committing crimes out here with guns, you know, they are a risk to society. I proposed a bond to have a gun court several years ago, which was shot down by President Preckwinkle, no pun intended. And I thought there would be a quicker way for us to dispose of these things. But simply saying that, you know, I'm all in on criminal justice reform, so I'm going to let everybody out on a no cash bond system, you know, it's not working, and it contributes to the mentality of the offenders.
All right. Speaking of guys who are out, before we let you go, I got to know this. Rob Blagojevich, you served in the legislature with him. You served in Springfield when he was governor. What is your thought on his return?
The only thing that surprises me, I really wasn't surprised that he showed no remorse going into jail, but I thought 8 years away from his family, 8 years to reflect on this, you'd see some type of repenting on his part. You're just not seeing it. I think at this point now it's angling for a media gig, which he'll probably get.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's interesting that Chicago and Chicago media, after the quick kind of 24-hour cycle, they said, hey, wait a second. You know, this is the guy that shook down the hospital, et cetera.
Right.
You know, we're ready to move on.
It ended pretty quickly.
But I don't think we've heard the last of him.
Although, there was a great moment, John Fritchie, who's now an attorney and a political pundit himself, but was in state legislature and, as you mentioned, Cook County Commissioner for a number of years. This is an amazing moment on CNN where Anderson Cooper gets so mad at Rob Blagojevich. This happened on Friday night. He gets so mad at Rob Blagojevich that he can't help himself. He has to swear.
Right. Anderson Cooper took him to church, as they would say.
Right. He goes, they were debating this whole idea of, you know, Blagojevich made a bunch of assertions that were clearly not true, but he figured he's on national press. People won't remember exactly what it was. Nobody did their research, and he's going to be able to get past them by doing that. That's an assumption a lot of politicians make. And he was wrong, because Anderson Cooper had the whole thing down. And basically Anderson Cooper just turns to Rob Blagojevich and says, everything you just said is bulb. Whoop.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, I don't think Rod expected that. I know I didn't. Anderson was very well prepared. You know, Rod kind of had that look on his face by the time it was done that, you know, he wanted to be on the next plane back to Colorado.
Right. How are my guys doing back there? You know, it is interesting. He is incredibly talented as a public speaker and as a guy making an argument. His great skill, he could have been one of the great orator attorneys in this town's history.
And he really, you know, I think that there is a place for him, and I think
I don't think
I think that, you know, there's a message that he could take, but I don't think that anybody can hear him until he says, I was wrong, I did it, I'm sorry, now let me talk about hair products. I don't know.
Right, exactly. Well, we'll see. I mean, that was tried. My former station hired him in between trials to be a talk show host, and it's a great novelty. It lasts for a little while, but
Dan Rostenkowski was doing political commentary after he got done too.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect that maybe it's possible that Rod Blagojevich ends up on a TV desk 3 weeks from tomorrow night for that. John, thank you very much for being with us. Really appreciate
it. All
right. Plus the Four Seasons Blackhawks giveaway coming up right after this. Trying something a little new today. These are, instead of the top five, the five things that you need to know today. And we'll do it throughout the hour. We're going to have some fun with this. The first thing we're going to start with, not exactly fun, but you do need to know about it. It is the coronavirus and the situation that led to a 1,000-point sell-off on the Dow today. 3.5% of the value of the Dow Jones Industrial Average and about 3.5% of the market was lost today because of fears of the coronavirus. And what is exactly this fear? What exactly is going on here? There has been an announcement by the World Health Organization that there is concern that this could become disease X. Now, what is disease X? And Kevin Olival is the president for research at Echo Health Alliances. COVID-19 disease X is what we're trying to figure out here. Kevin, thank you very much. So the idea...
Hey, thanks for having me.
The idea of disease X is a disease that would be an easily transmittable disease that would come from a source that we would have no immunity to it, and it would become pandemic. And we've seen this with previous things throughout these last two decades, right? I mean, we've had hysteria over whether SARS or MERS or things like that. What is different about coronavirus?
Well, SARS and MERS are actually all in the family coronaviruses. So this is just another new coronavirus. And what the WHO had named Disease X was, you know, a way for us to get prepared and get ahead of this next new emerging event. You know, it's 3 years ago where they came up with that term, Disease X, and what is called the Research and Development Blueprint, where a team of public health experts and disease experts from around the world get together in Geneva at WHO headquarters and really make a list of what are the top diseases that we see as a threat, and that there are little tools developed, little therapeutics or vaccines or treatments currently in development or in existence, and they come up with a list of about 8 or 9 diseases, and they decided that there's things out there that we don't know about that pose a threat, and let's just put that as a category of disease X. And this is exactly what we're seeing right now with this new COVID-19.
So when they have something like this, there are already emergency procedures in place. We've learned a little bit about that. We've seen it in China, where they were able to immediately erect these tent hospitals and be able to get all of the equipment that they needed, or at least try to get the equipment that they needed to at least tamp down to some degree the transmission from the patient to the medical providers. We've seen this in all those movies, right? And Contagion and all the rest of it. There is a plan in place, but is there also a plan in place for drug manufacturers to immediately start researching this and try to create a vaccine? Because these are viruses, not unlike the flu, where you could create a vaccine for it by changing the structure.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, vaccine development takes time, so you know, sometimes that process can be years, if not many months, in the making. And so, you know, there's a time lag there. But I think in general, you know, yes, we need to, there's money now being put into the development of some of these tools for this new disease. But I think it's also, even though the, you know, the global fears are there now and the virus is clearly spreading to some new places, you know, just thinking about where did this come from and thinking about prevention as we move forward, this will not be the only new disease X that's going to emerge in the human population. So how do we put in some basic infrastructure, public health infrastructure in place to prevent this from happening again and to sort of mitigate against it even without the development of new vaccines?
All right, let me ask you where you think this is all heading, though, because obviously the stock market is responding to it. Market, I shouldn't say just ours, but markets around the world are responding to it, worried about big slowdowns. How bad do you think this will get?
You know, I agree with the WHO that, you know, they haven't declared a pandemic yet. Yes, there's been transmission on multiple continents, but by some definitions, some people might call it a pandemic. But it also has to do with impact and how is the, you know, what is the overall impact on the human population? And they feel that it hasn't crossed that threshold yet. I do still think there's time for some response and containment. I think what we're seeing in China is actually that some of those procedures they've put into place have been working, and the number of cases have actually gone down. So we're kind of seem to be over a bit of a hump in China. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take vigilance. And, you know, this is not something we can just sit down and assume that come spring it's going to go away. We have to really work hard to sort of identify cases and put some basic public health measures in place. Washing hands, closing schools and gatherings and those types of things really can do a lot to preventing spread. So I'm hopeful, but, you know, I think it's something we really got to be working hard at and be vigilant about.
All right. Kevin Olivelle, he's a vice president for research at Echo Health Alliances. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it, sir. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Let's check in with Lauren with the traffic and the weather. All right. The 5 things you need to know. Here's the 4th most important thing you need to know, and that was the trial in New York of Harvey Weinstein. A verdict, split verdict, was rendered today by the jury, with the film producer convicted of forcing himself on Mimi Haley. This is how you pronounce that, actually, for a production assistant and on Project Runway. And he's also been convicted of raping a woman in a Manhattan hotel. Though Weinstein was acquitted of 3 other charges, he was remanded to jail to await sentencing on March 11th. And the district attorney, Cyrus Vance, told reporters Weinstein's actions were despicable.
Weinstein is a vicious, serial sexual predator who used his power to threaten, rape, assault, trick, humiliate and silence his victims. I hope that survivors will see that in this justice system, prosecutors, judges, and juries will believe them, even when the facts are not simple, and even when the dynamics of the relationships between the survivors and the abuser are complicated.
All right, that's his prosecutor. Here's his defender on the hotline with us, Donna Rotuno, who is from Rotuno and Girolamo, thank you. It's been a hard day for me, Donna.
It's okay.
You're an attorney for Harvey Weinstein. All right, let's talk about what his reaction. Do we know what his reaction was? Do you know?
Well, I mean, of course, I was sitting next to him when it happened, and you know, this is a tough day for Harvey, and he's remained very strong and steadfast throughout, and he remains strong today.
Now he's been remanded to custody. Were you expecting that?
We were. were expecting it. You know, obviously, I was hoping that the judge would allow him to stay out pending sentencing, especially since he was found not guilty of the most serious charges. He has no criminal background. He's never been arrested prior to this case. He's 67 years old. Everyone knows who he is. It's not like he's fleeing the jurisdiction. He had an ankle monitor on. So we were asking that he be allowed to stay home pending sentencing, but the judge took him into custody.
Do you have a sense that the judge is going to take all those other factors into account here in terms of the New York sentencing? Because there's also a case in Los Angeles that he will have to stand, we assume. Will you be a part of that trial?
You know, we don't know. We would like to finish what we're doing here before we make any decisions going forward.
But in terms of the judge,
I'd like to come home to Chicago for a little while at least.
So, what is your sense of how this judge is going to be in terms of sentencing? I mean, has he been fair through the rest of the trial?
I would like to say that he's going to be very fair, and you know, at the off chance that he's listening to this wonderful show in Chicago, I would like to say that he's going to be very, very fair. I'm not so confident, but we'll see.
All right, and now that he will have to be in custody until sentencing. Do you have any idea?
Correct.
Do you have any idea of when or if the California authorities would take custody of him?
Well, we don't. And what we are attempting to do is see if a New York Court of Appeals will allow him to be out pending sentencing. There is a possibility that could happen here. So we are going to attempt to do that later this week.
So you're kicking that up
to them.
We'll
see. Yeah, we're going to try. And if not, then obviously he will address the sentencing issues March 11th. In terms of Los Angeles, we have absolutely no idea what they're going to do. I know they came out today saying that they're still going forward with their case. But in terms of the logistics of getting him out there and dealing with those bond issues, we don't know.
Okay. And so for Harvey Weinstein, from your perspective or from his perspective, he was convicted of two of the counts here, of the five.
Correct.
Is there a victory in any way there for you or he?
You know, I think obviously the fact that he was found not guilty of the most serious counts is good. I mean, he's not looking at life in prison. But, you know, for me, of course, I wanted a not guilty all the way down.
In terms of this, the rape conviction here with Ms. Mann, who is the accuser here, they went on to have a consensual relationship after the
incident. For many years.
Right. And you, obviously, that was the thrust of your argument as the lawyer for Harvey Weinstein. Why did the jury not track with that, do you think?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. I wondered if in some ways that was the least serious count, and they just felt like, you know, they were making some compromise by not finding him guilty of the most serious count. I have no idea what was in their minds. Frankly, that's the most surprising one to me, given the evidence. And like I said, none of us were in those rooms at the time that these allegations, you know, allegedly took place. But what we do know is all the contact and the things that happened surrounding those things, which would make us question whether or not what they claim happened actually did. So, you know, from my perspective, that will always surprise me.
And he was found guilty of third-degree rape. What is the difference between first, second, and third there?
In New York, that's, I think, probation to 4 years. So it's the least serious.
Okay. Do you know what the qualifying circumstances are there that make it the least serious?
Just, I think, the allegation itself and the terms of it.
That's what he's charged with.
Right,
so that's how the
correct.
That's how the district attorney there in New York charged it. All right.
Correct.
All right. Well, hopefully you'll be able to get home here. And
yes, I'm going to try to miss the snow and then come home after.
Yeah. Obviously this is, you know, this is one of those cases. I mean, lawyers, that's your job. Defense lawyers. We deal with this all the time with some of our friends and our legal analysts here who are defense attorneys. And sometimes they defend the most reprehensible people. And because everybody has their right to a day in court and everybody has a right to their defense. And so
I appreciate that very much. And that's true. And my fear is that we're trying to move away from that as a country. And I hope that we are not.
Well, social media is not helping. Let's just put it that way.
No, it's not.
You know, in terms of that, the way that people are interacting with each other about these issues and they take it out of the courtroom and everybody seems to think that they have a sense of exactly what happened when they don't. And then you believe somebody that said something on Twitter and it may not actually be true. But I mean, you know, Harvey Weinstein is really seen in the main in the United States, and especially in the entertainment industry, as a villain. And it's hard not to get around that. But he does, you know, lawyers like yourself have to go out and do what you have to do. So Donna Rotunno, who from Chicago, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Donna. All right. Interesting set of developments there. The again, there were five different charges here. And when you say, and as Donna said, and you know, this is what the lawyer has to say when she says that these are the two least serious. They're all serious. There's no way to really make that pretty. There's no way to make any of this pretty. And he is facing up to 25 years in prison now after this, and will be tried again in California coming up at some point. There's, I think, very little hope that California will drop this. Even if he gets 25 years, they're going to want to send him out there and have him see that. And at 67 years old, he's likely to spend the rest of his life in prison. All right. These are the top five things that you need to know before. It's a little bit of a different take that we're doing here. I should explain this. So the top five at five, right? The whole idea is the top five things. We do it in half an hour. What we're trying now is the top five things you need to know today. What are the top five big stories? And we take that through the entire 5 o'clock hour. And as we do that, we look ahead to, let me look behind here for a second. We talk about the coronavirus. We'll be coming up with that a little bit later on as well. And the split verdict in the Harvey Weinstein trial coming up. Jussie Smollett and the round of charges there. Warren Buffett gets a new toy. That's something you're not going to hear everywhere else, but you should hear about it here. And the memorial for Kobe Bryant is also coming your way. I'll play some of that, including Michael Jordan's speech. Eulogy, I suppose, but it would seem more like a speech than a eulogy. And it was, if you have not heard it, we will play some of it for you coming up. It is absolutely one of those moments where you saw Michael Jordan in a way that I think most sports fans don't see him vulnerable. And he even joked about becoming his own crying Jordan meme, which brought the house down at the Staples Center, which was an absolute sellout. But Jordan was uniquely personal and uniquely vulnerable and approachable and all that while he was crying, while he was making his speech. You never really saw that from him. You only saw him cry about that he cried out of happiness. And then, obviously, Chicagoans, many will remember in 1994, him crying about the passing of his father. And after that, it was always about celebratory things, and he sort of darkened after that. What you found here from our own Michael Jordan was his sense of where he places himself in basketball history, and where he senses where he places himself in entertainment and business history, and where Kobe Bryant fit into that. And you saw, for a rare moment, you saw Michael Jordan talk about somebody else in a way, and this is not a shot at Michael Jordan, I'm stating what we already know. You saw him talk about somebody else in a warm and really observant way. And it was a very, very, very special moment at the Staples Center today. So we're playing that for you coming up at before the top of the hour, I should say. This is a work in progress. I hope you understand. The kids right now are wondering where's the number five? That's what they're all
thinking. This isn't a bed I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I know.
That's it's like moving into a new home. Everything's different.
I know it does. But it smells new though, doesn't it? It smells completely new.
I went to go to the bathroom at night and I fell down the stairs. It's not where it used to be.
All right. Well, we'll work it out. Don't worry about it, little Lauren. We've got it all worked out. All right, so we got the news coming your way for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Kim Gordon is standing by there. And then on the other side, we will get to the third most important thing that you need to know this week. Kim? It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, these are the five most important things you need to know about today. And I'm not including the weather in that, because the weather really is the most important thing you need to know about today, because we got weather moving in tonight into tomorrow. Tomorrow's rush hour going home is going to be a nightmare. The kind of nightmare that we had in that was the second week of January when everything got closed down. That's the kind of storm that's moving in. It's said to be the biggest snowstorm of the year. We'll get you more details on that, obviously, in the news and on the quarter hours here as we talk to Lauren about what's happening in the skies. But we'll also check in with Rick DeMaio a little bit later on. If you want an explanation that is really in-depth and detailed in the most detail of details, Rick will give it to you. Have no fear. All right. Now, the third most important thing for you to know today, what is today?
24th
of January, of February 2020. Thank you, Lauren. Is this Jussie Smollett in Chicago returning? I would not say triumphantly to Chicago. Getting into the, did he take a cab to come down? Did his lawyers bring him down? How did he get downtown? How did he get to 26 in California? Did he stay? Did he go to the Subway that he likes to go to for the tuna sandwich? I mean, he was willing to go to the tuna sandwich in the middle of the night during the coldest night of the year in Chicago. He must really love that tuna sandwich. Did he go there? No.
I think he hired two brothers to drive him over.
They were there, by the way, in the courthouse today. Oh, boy. See, now that's, you know what? When it's bad when a relationship sort of breaks. That's like running into your exes right there. That's ugly. That's very ugly. So, he was in court today, and he entered a plea of not guilty to the charges through his attorney, Tina Glandian. And this was in front of Cook County Judge James Lynn. Now, Cook County Judge James Lynn is, I will say, as a longtime court watcher here and a person who's covered this from both a news and an opinion perspective, James Lynn, I can assure you, is one of the most buttoned down and by the book interesting judges you're going to find. He's one of the most seasoned judges. He's got a great sense of humor, but he will take no crap in his courtroom. So this, I'm just going to say something right now to the participants in this case, specifically the defendants in this case. If I were you, I would think not about going to trial. So, after the hearing, here is his attorney, and they're making the argument. The attorney here is making the argument for Jussie Smollett, is making the argument that the special prosecutor that was named in this case to go try it after the recusal, non-recusal happened with Kim Fox, that special prosecutor cannot bring these charges because he's illegitimate.
So Judge Tooman's June 21st order in which he granted a special prosecutor was flawed. It was contrary to the statute. The statute basically only allows the judge to appoint a special prosecutor under two very discrete situations. And Judge Tooman found that neither of those apply. He then went further and granted it anyway on the grounds that what Ms. Fox had done was the equivalent of a recusal. And that's actually not what the statute says. And so his order was exceeded his authority, and we are hopeful that the Supreme Court will agree and will reverse the order.
Mm-hmm. Now, she also says, Jussie Smollett's attorney, new attorney, by my count, sixth, says that he just wants this whole thing to go away.
He's obviously frustrated to be dragged through this process again, but he has tremendous support. He was surrounded by his family today who flew in from California to be here with him today, and he's strong, he's resilient, he'll get through this, but it's frustrating.
Yeah. All he had to do was say he was sorry. Say he did it and he was sorry. That's all he had to do. And it goes away. It goes away.
I actually wonder if he ever thinks back to when this all originally kind of was a thought process for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's going to be a good idea. You know how I'll show them. Oh, if only he would have rethought that.
Yes. Yes, that is true. However, the Osandero brothers, remember them? Those are the two guys that went and bought the rope. Had nothing to do with the tuna sandwich.
Yeah, the MAGA guys, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. They were in court today, and their attorney, Gloria Schmidt, says that they're only there because they want to see this process play out.
The brothers want the public to know that they were honest and open and remorseful about their conduct involved in this entire event. They have been truthful since day one. They will continue to be truthful. They will continue to cooperate. And do you know what they got in return? Nothing. To anyone out there who thinks that they got some kind of immunity or some kind of plea deal out of this, that's incorrect. Their lives have been put on hold for this moment.
Uh-huh. You know what she needs to do? She needs to stop and dare Jussie Smollett to demand that they be charged with his assault and see where that goes. This is so stupid. This could be over in a second. But this is a national story today. This is another way that Chicago's going to get embarrassed. It's bad enough that the Gucci store can't keep any of the purses out anymore. And now the Jussie Smollett has arrived, and if the Hollywood press triumphantly back in to Chicago to prove everybody else wrong. All right. The two most important things you need to know today, other than the weather coming your way, but here's the weather from Lauren Lapka, along with the traffic. Not necessarily in order of importance, but in order of... We went from the more dire to the more pop culture here, just to let you know, as we're coming along. Here is Rahm Emanuel had to get on television yesterday and make a very, very clear warning for Democrats. Have you seen, it was on ABC yesterday, it was on CBS today, and he's saying that if Democrats go with Bernie Sanders, they are completely screwed. Completely screwed, I think was the term he was using. And I've never seen Rahm so absolutely sure of anything. Because when he would stand up as mayor of Chicago, he'd stand there and he'd tell you, that, you know, this is what I think. But you can always see there was a little bit of hesitance in him. Not in this particular case. He is dead set. And you know what he's also thinking here? He's also thinking, why didn't I run for president when I had a chance?
Take 2018. All the red to blues districts we flipped and taking from Republicans, were mainly in the suburban areas. You take Illinois, there's three in Chicago. There's three suburban districts there. I don't see any, not one candidate who won in 2018 flipping a district has yet to endorse Bernie. It's survival. And that means you're not only risking the presidency, the Senate, the House, the governorships, and also all the state houses for redistricting.
So you're saying he's going to lose the moderate swing voters, you're saying?
He has basically, as I said when I first said, he's upending six successful national models of an election.
He also, I should point out, that Bernie Sanders, the front runner in the Democratic primary, I never thought I would ever say those words. I thought it was just a protest vote against Hillary in 2016. Turns out, no. There are people who actually like him. I don't know who these people are. And I firmly believe that this is Putin 2.0. This really has the Internet Research Agency in St. Petersburg, Russia, written all over it. That now all of a sudden, look, you know what would really be funny? This would really be funny. We'll get Bernie Sanders to be the Democratic candidate. All we got to do is put some messages in Facebook and look out. They'll eat him up. Bernie Sanders was in an interview in which he said people misunderstand Fidel Castro. It wasn't all bad. Well, yes, I guess that's true. If you're looking for free health care, you got it from Fidel Castro. If you were also a prisoner in an overcrowded prison, you did get your chance at freedom. He put you on a raft and you had to actually hope that you could float 92 miles across the Straits of Florida to get to the Keys and land successfully on that raft. But he did give you a chance. So I guess you got to look at it that way. And he only executed the political prisoners he really didn't like. And here's Bernie Sanders. I cannot believe it is. Sometimes I turn on the television. And when Rahm Emanuel is the person who makes the most amount of sense in the shortest period of time, you know that something has gone wrong. All day, yesterday, watching TV, all day. All those shows, all the things, whether it was the political stuff or even any of the takes on what's happening, especially here in Illinois as we head toward the primary, it's like none of it makes any sense. I cannot imagine. We'll talk about this in the upcoming weeks, obviously. But I just cannot imagine that Bernie Sanders is going to win the state of Illinois. However, should we point out Michael Bloomberg's office here in Chicago, his campaign office up in the Edgewater neighborhood, was graffitied and vandalized. I think probably by Michael Bloomberg, so that people will know that he has a campaign office here in Chicago. And it was all kinds of like the whole, what was it with those people that were camping out and down near Wall Street? You know, it's that whole group of folks that are very upset with him. The anti 1% people. That seems to be that seems at this moment that's that and the other people on the Democratic stage are the only people mad at him. Just wait. I can't believe it. And finally.
Your love is bright as ever. Even in the shadows.
A memorial service inside the Staples Center today, celebrating the lives of Kobe Bryant and his daughter and the seven other victims of that helicopter crash a couple of weeks ago. Jersey numbers worn by Kobe number 24 and Gianna number 2 were hung at the top of the Staples Center. There were other people in the crowd wearing those as well. And This is one of those things where they were showing it. I guess CNN and MSNBC showed it. I don't know that I went over to Fox. They were not showing it. And the networks didn't cover it. But I turned it on for a little bit. And I thought, oh, I'll just see what this is. And I all of a sudden got sucked into the emotions of it again. I cannot believe I'm still to this day, a month later, I am still upset about the death of Kobe Bryant. It's like, I don't think about it every day, but I think a lot of people, when you start to see this thing, and it's like, it's the fathers with daughters thing, that's what everybody keeps saying is the emotional play here. It's just the tragedy, the suddenness, all of those kinds of things. But there's something also almost inexplicable about it. So the craziest part of this was Jordan. We'll get to that in a second. It opened, it was hosted by Jimmy Kimmel.
I don't think any of us could have imagined this. Everywhere you go, you see his face, his number, Gigi's face, Gigi's number. Everywhere, at every intersection, there are hundreds of murals painted by artists who were inspired, not because he's a basketball player, but because Kobe was an artist too. And not just in L.A., across the country, in Kobe's hometown, Philadelphia, in Italy, in India, the Philippines, China, New York, Phoenix, Boston, for God's sake. In places where he would be booed on the court, Kobe is missed. Even the great Boston Celtic Bill Russell wore number 24 and a Lakers jersey to yesterday's game.
Wow. It was thunderous applause for it. And Bill Russell was sitting in the crowd as well. How about that? Now, Michael Jordan, of all the speeches I've seen Michael Jordan cry through over the years, and there have been, but they're always about celebratory, except for his dad, and I will give him that. In the early mid-90s, his father was murdered. He was asleep in his car, the side of a road, as he was going one place to another overnight, and he just pulled over the side, took a nap, and he was shot to death by two guys who wanted to rob him in North Carolina. And that, also the suddenness of that, and the crazy emotions that surrounded that for Michael Jordan, and that really is the reason that he took 2 years off, because he just had to recalibrate his life, because his father had been at all the first three-peat. There, and he would cry with his father. That they have a cigar, and it was interesting because now he looks just like his father looked, because he would be close to what his father's age was at that moment. And that's where you saw him be emotional. This is the only other time I think that the public has seen Michael Jordan like this.
He wanted to be the best basketball player that he could be, and as I got to know him, I wanted to be the best big brother that I could be. To do that, You have to put up with the aggravation, the late night calls, or the dumb questions. I took great pride as I got to know Kobe Bryant that he was just trying to be a better person, a better basketball player. We talked about business. We talked about family. We talked about everything. And he was just trying to be a better person. Now he's got me. I'll have to look at another crime meme for the Knicks. I told my wife I wasn't going to do this because I didn't want to see that for the next 3 or 4 years. That is what Kobe Bryant does to me.
Great moment. Great human moment. And then he ended his speech with this.
To live in the moment means to enjoy each and every one that we come in contact with. When Kobe Bryant died, a piece of me died. And as I look in this arena and across the globe, a piece of you died, or else you wouldn't be here. Those are the memories that we have to live with and we learn from. I promise you, from this day forward, I will live with the memories of knowing that I had a little brother that I tried to help in every way I could. Please, rest in peace, little brother.
Wow. Wow. It's really never on Michael Jordan to make you feel better in a moment of trouble, because he's, you know, he's just not known for that. He's not known for a guy that rushes to the problem. He's very philanthropic. I think it's underestimated how much money he actually spends on causes, on good causes, but he's not very public about it. And when he did that today at the Staples Center, I think it went a long way. It meant a lot to a lot of people, because he doesn't normally do those kinds of things. All right, on the other side, Grandpa got a new toy. It's the Rokan Show. If you are on the roads right now, if you're driving home, you're on the Kennedy, the Dan Ryan, the Edens, the Stevenson, the Eisenhower. Should I name them all for you? The Ronald Reagan. The you know, there's 15 different sets of numbers that I have no idea what they mean. I'm an old school guy. I just know the names. I even know the Bishop Ford, even though that was just named like an hour ago after Bishop Ford. He's a very important man. He's very important. You know what I know about him? He was a bishop. All right. That's today. You're driving home. You're kind of moving along. Tomorrow, 24 hours from right now, it's going to be a mess out there. We'll get you details throughout this hour on that as we approach it, because you may want to think twice about driving downtown tomorrow. If you have an opportunity to take a train, the snowstorm that's going to move in is going to be peaking, or really starting its fury, is probably a better way of saying it, right around the start of rush hour, 2 or 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. It's going to start snowing overnight tonight, going to get a couple inches, and then it's going to really, really lock in. So just giving a little warning as you're driving home tonight, think about what you want to do tomorrow. Now, this is one of my favorite stories of the day. Earlier today, billionaire Warren Buffett, who's now 80, what is he now? Hold on, he's 90-something, right, isn't he? 89, just about to turn 90. He got his first smartphone, and he was on CNBC. And he was talking about the Apple company, and they were talking about Apple stock. I mean, he knows everything there is to know about these companies, but he knows absolutely nothing about modernity.
I am now using, not very often, but I'm using the latest model, and I'll give you a little preview of our movie for the annual meeting. We haven't done it yet, but it will probably show me crushing with my foot, my old flip phone, while cozying up to the new smartphone.
When did you get the smartphone?
I've been given several of them, but including by Tim Cook. My flip phone is permanently gone. The number's been changed to my new phone.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
I mean, you're looking at an 89-year-old guy that's barely beginning to be with it.
It's cute. I do like it, though. The guy's worth close to $100 billion, and Tim Cook gives him a phone. If I'm Tim Cook, I charge him for that phone. I'll give you the phone, but you know, we really do need the $435. Now, I want to ask you a question. 312-981-7200, if you'd like to answer it, and answer at your own peril. Who here has tried to teach their elderly parents how to use a smart device? It is the most confounding thing ever. And I know at some point, I think to myself, I know at some point I'm going to be just like this. I don't know what the device is going to be, but I'm going to be in my 70s or 80s and trying to figure out some piece of technological modernity, and I will have no idea what the hell I'm doing. And it will be so simple for my grandkids, who knows, my great-grandkids, to be explaining it to me. But this has happened to me. This happened with my mother. I got her an Apple, you know, an iPhone. And I'm sounding like her because I'm not quite even sure what to call it. And she has no idea how to answer it. I call her all the time on it, and she never gets it. She just goes straight to voicemail. And then sometimes she'll be with other people. She'll answer it, and I will hear her deep in the background. What? Hello? What? Hello? What? What? And then I just have to hang up.
And they always leave a message. They don't get it that you can see who called you.
The voicemail is
annoying.
Even worse is my mother accuses me of not picking up the phone halfway through the voicemail. Why don't you just pick up this phone? And I have to explain to her, that's not how this works. This is not an answering machine. It doesn't play your message.
Does she text?
No.
Oh, because my parents text, but they always sign their name. Like, I don't know who it is.
Oh, my gosh. I do love that. I know what you're talking about now with the voicemail. It's like, hey, it's mom. It's like, I know it's you.
So
it says that right here.
So I'm all I could think about. And now who, you know, Warren's got some kids and grandkids and I've been great grandkids now. And, you know, who's responsible for trying to teach them how to use it? That's what I want to know. All right. Stories from the other side at 312-981-7200. Honest to God, the thing about my mom, I can't even get her to understand the swipe thing. Right? You put your finger on it, and then she's I'm sitting in her house. I'm calling her on my phone to her phone, and I show her the swipe thing, and then she puts her finger just on it, doesn't do the swipe. It took me 10 minutes to explain that you got to swipe. I now know, though, the good news is my mom is not on Tinder. That's the one thing I know for sure out of this. Unless there's some sort of dial-up Tinder that she could be on where she just calls in. Like 411 for Tinder. All right, we'll get to your phone calls. 312-981-7200 on the other side. But first, here is Lauren Lapka. What's happening in the roads and the skies?
Mayor Lightfoot promising to revitalize the South and West Side. Joe Donnelly goes to Pullman to see how the money is being spent. WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9.
Hey, good Kevin Powell. We're talking about the fact that Warren Buffett got a cell phone. All right, fine. Is that a big deal? No. You know what's a big deal? He got a smartphone. You know what's even a bigger deal? He has no idea how to use it. Because he's 89 years old. Apparently, nobody over the age of 80, very few, let's put it this way, very few over the age of 80 can figure out the tablet phone. The flip phone, about 50-50. I got my mom a flip phone first, or like that jitterbug thing, whatever they call that deal, where it's like a gigantic clam phone and it opens up. It's got big buttons on it, and it's got like two buttons at the bottom where the hashtag and the star would be, right? And you'd kind of know what that would be like, you know, call the kid or call somebody else, the two things to choose from. And that was a bit of a disaster, but she demanded that she get her own iPhone. And I got it for her, and she still, 4 years later, has never been able to make or receive a phone call on it. 312-981-7200. Stories from the Edge. Diane, you're on WGN.
Hey, Ro. We got my aunt a cell phone, and she kept having us take it back because she said it wasn't working. So about the third time, my nephew was so frustrated, he said, "Graham, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it." And she said, "Don't tell me. It doesn't have a dial tone."
That is it. I'm going to cough up a lung. That is right. That's exactly the problem. It's like, have you seen that video where the dad tries to get his two, like, tween kids, like 12 and maybe 14, like a tween and a teenager? He gives them a rotary phone and tells them to make a phone call.
And they have no clue what to do
with it. Just put it in front of them. No clue. All right. Thank you, Diane. Appreciate it. Holly, you're on WGN. Hi, Holly.
Hello, Ro. So my dad was so funny. When he would leave a message for us, he would say, "Hi, this is your father, John O'Brien." I don't know if we had other fathers out there he thought we had, and we didn't know which one was calling.
Or another John O'Brien, not your father. I get it.
Right, yeah. Right. But right. Then it would always also end with, "And by the way, if you call me, don't leave a message, because there's something wrong with my phone, and I can't get messages." So he didn't know how to get a message either.
On his cell phone.
On his cell phone.
Yeah, this is really the problem I'm having with my mom, is that, and again, this is many years into it, that she still doesn't quite understand the idea that when she calls me on my cell phone, and I don't have a landline anymore. I can't believe I did this. When the cell phone companies in the early 2000s were telling you, "You're going to get rid of your landline." I'm like, "I'm never going to get rid of my landline. These batteries don't last forever." I was so quick to get rid of my landline. It was like, it couldn't get over it fast enough. So, but when she leaves a message for me, she doesn't understand why I'm not picking up in the middle of the message. "Hi, it's me. Yeah, but pick up. And I'm like, so I'm listening to this generally 8 to 10 hours later, and I'm listening to her plaintively telling me to pick up the phone. And I've explained it to her, oh, I don't know, 200 times, that's not how it works, but they just don't seem to get it. And I just wonder.
No, they don't get it.
Holly, it's going to happen to us. It's just going to be a matter of time before this thing. There will be some technology that comes out
that we will.
Everybody will understand except for us at a certain age.
Oh, absolutely. My dad retired right before computers became a big thing. He retired in like 93, so he never even had an email address. So he retired early in his 50s and never had an email address. And my mom passed away. She did emails and Facebook and all that. She passed away, so we took the computer out of his house. And at one point in time, he got a call about his computer warranty. And I said, "Dad, you don't have a computer." And he's like, "I don't. What happened to my computer?" And I'm like, "You never even used the computer."
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I know. And like, we're complaining about our parents. We love our parents. It's just that at some point, they just become useless. I mean, that's the thing. That's just the deal. There's a moment where you no longer can get any advice from them or anything that they haven't already told you about 300 times. And it's really just kind of on us at that moment just to say, "All right, we got this. We're just going to have to take care of it." Holly, thank you very much.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Thanks. I get that all the time, actually, for my mom. I had to get her a series of computers over the years. And then she would always tell me, I had to come back over because the computer was always broken. Because there was something that she would get locked out of the login. And I didn't even assign a password to the login. I just would say, "You just click on this and it opens." And then the mouse was confounding. The printer, she needed a printer. Have to have a printer. Most important thing is you must have a printer. So I get her a printer. Nothing prints. And so, "Did you hit the print button?" "I don't know. Where's the button?" I said, it's on, use your mouse. What's a mouse? This is 4 years in.
See, this is funny that we're having this conversation because I just got friended on Instagram a few days ago by my grandpa. He made an Instagram. Granted, he has one post, but I don't know if he really knows how to use it or someone's trying to teach
him. How old is he?
He is...
Is this your World War II grandpa that we met?
No. The other side.
Okay.
I think he already celebrated 90.
Oh, my God, on Instagram. Grandpa. Yeah. You know, now Instagram's dead, by the way. Just want to point that out. once I got an Instagram, my daughter decided it's no longer cool.
You can also tell that he's confused because there are two clear pages or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Like
there's
blank.
Two of them.
There's two blank, right, two blank profiles.
Yes, but it's clearly both him. So he probably tried to make one and then definitely couldn't remember the password, so created a whole new one.
Cecilia, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Cecilia.
Hi, Ro. I'm going to be 81 in March, and I have my smartphone. I have an Android. I don't have an iPhone, but it's just because I prefer the Android.
Mm-hmm.
But I do lots of things with it. And
are you calling me from it right now?
Like I'm sorry?
Are you calling me from it right now?
Oh, yes,
okay.
I am.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Very good. All right. Well,
yeah.
Then you know what?
So,
there's
mean,
an exception to every rule, Cecilia.
Yeah, you just said nobody over 80.
I said very few. And that's yeah. And so you, again, you're breaking the mold. Let me ask you a question. How many of your other friends who are around your age are proficient on a tablet phone? Not a flip phone, but a tablet phone.
Not a real lot of them.
No.
Some of them don't even want to have computers.
No, I don't trust it.
But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that's them. I'm okay with that.
Good. I'm glad you're modern. That's very important.
But my sister and I were both, she's 76, and I'm going to be 81, like I said. And we're very, very savvy.
The other day, I just
took a picture and used my OneDrive and emailed it off to somebody. So I was pretty proud of myself.
That's very good. You're a little ahead of me because the OneDrive gets me. That drives me nuts. I'm not sure. There's too many of those different software packages that are now available on everything. And it was, mm-hmm. why is there a OneDrive on my phone? But I got a cloud. I got a this. I got a that. I don't know. Next thing you know, yep. I've got ePix on my phone. Some like television thing. I don't know what I need it for. I am actually turning into my parents right at this very moment. I'm watching it happen, Cecilia. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. All righty.
Bye. It's like because like, all of a sudden I see something like a tile on my phone. I'm like, what the hell is this thing? Where did it come from? And I realized my cloud sent it to me because I just signed up for something on my Apple TV. Oh, don't even start with me on that with my mother. My mother on basic cable was having a problem. She could find two things, Fox News and Channel 7. And every once in a while, Turner Classic Movies. That she thinks it's a brand new movie network. Look at all the brand new movies here. All right, very quickly, one last call before we get out of here. Sarah, you're on WGN.
Hi, bro. So my dad is 73 years old, and he kept telling me, he was like, Sarah, why do I have to pay for Siri? Like, on his iPhone? Why do I have to pay for Siri all of a sudden? Now, last year, he had gotten a new car, and when I finally made it to his house to talk to him about it, he handed me a renewal notice for Sirius XM Radio. He had no idea the difference between the two.
This is, and you know, here's the thing though, with older consumers, you know, they always ask your age on all these applications for this stuff, and they're doing it, you know, for a lot of reasons, but I firmly believe, and I'm a tad conspiratorial here, I firmly believe that they also know they're going to confuse the older ones with stuff if they send it to them. So they send them a lot of stuff in snail mail. You know, it depends on how they want to market to them. Does he now?
Exactly. I just thought it was funny that he didn't have any idea what the difference between the two was.
Does he have Sirius also?
He had the free trial when he got a new car,
yeah.
But it expired.
Got it. Yeah.
And so they sent him a notice that, you know, hey, you have to renew this. And he was like, Sarah, why do I have to pay for Siri all of a sudden?
You know, I agree with you
about the swiping too. He has no idea how to swipe.
Yeah, it's a funny. It's almost like their electricity goes out in their finger pads or something. They're
exactly.
All of a sudden they're swiping. And it's really not quite swiping. Oh, you got to do it a couple times. Just do it until you
exactly.
get it across. It's like a game. Think of it that way. It's like you're pushing a ping pong ball. There is a moment here though that when they find out what their bill is, that's the one thing you got to keep your parents from ever finding out. Because like all the rest of us, we have no idea what we're paying for anymore, right? Because if you're using an Android system or the Apple system, and then you're putting things in the cloud and you're using Apple TV and you're buying products and you're buying apps for your phone or whatever it is, and then you got subscription services and this and that. If they found out, these are people that would complain. They complain about Starbucks because it's more than 90 cents for a cup of coffee, which they even think is a ripoff. It should be 25 cents. That when they find out that what they're paying for an app, don't tell them. Thank you, Sarah.
I try to tell him not to download apps and don't even leave him voicemails because he doesn't know how to check them.
Right, exactly. You should just turn the voicemail thing off. That is a totally lost cause. All right. Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate it. We will be back with very important, actually, piece of we're going to do a little good here on the other side of the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, in which we're going to tell you how you can take part in a really cool event, a life-saving event, the Air Climb, the American Lung Association's ALA. Fight for Air Climb, which is going to be happening coming up in the weekend. And I believe that Mr. Powell is taking part in things like this before. But first, let us now check in with Kim Gordon in the WGN newsroom. Rocon show right here, 720 WGN. Just a few minutes. We're going to get you ready for your drive to and from work tomorrow. So stay tuned. If you're driving home right now, stay tuned because right after the traffic and the weather with Lauren Lapka coming your way in about 5 minutes, we are going to talk to Rick DeMaio. He's going to get you ready, depending on where you live and which way you're going tomorrow in afternoon rush hour. He'll try to get you home because it's going to be a total mess. Everyone's getting a significant amount of snow tomorrow starting. It's going to start overnight tonight, be sort of light in the morning, and then look out into the afternoon. He'll tell you where it's going to be worst. But before we do that, we want to do a little bit of good here. Here is an event that I have never taken part in because it scares me. I'm just going to tell you that right now, Ashley Gockin from the American Lung Association Fight for Air Climb, that it's going to be a week from Sunday. It comes around every spring like this, and our own Kevin Powell has done it, and I know a number of other people. I know Dave Ennett from WGN has done it, and he's an absolute monster at doing this. This is where these people climb up the stairs to the presidential towers, right? All four towers. You could do one tower, two towers, or all four, right?
Yes, that's correct. So on March 8th, thousands will come together in the West Loop neighborhood to climb the presidential towers in the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb. Yeah. It's the biggest air climb. It raises awareness for the 32 million Americans affected by lung disease. But what is really cool about this year is that firefighters across Chicagoland can also participate in the First Alert Firefighter Challenge, where they actually climb in full gear.
Oh, my God. Now, I know they do that for training purposes, right? I mean, that's what they do in firefighters. But that's sort of like going to work. It's like doing a talk show on a Sunday for me. Why would I want to do that? Why would it? And that doesn't really count. I'm not saving anybody's life, but they are going to do it. So really, that's a cool thing, because if you're doing it, now the firefighter is going to be in their own lane. I never understood how this works. Like, for me, I would still be on the stairs from last year. I would somewhere be around the 23rd, 24th floor by now. When the firefighters are going by, they've got like the full stuff. It's hard for them to pass, isn't it?
So they will be in their challenge. It's the First Alert Firefighter Challenge. They'll climb up 180 floors of the presidential tower. It's really important because it raises awareness for the 32 million Americans affected by lung disease, and it brings awareness to the fire services that are really affected by smoke and other substances in their jobs every day.
That's cool. And is this firefighters from Chicago and all the other municipalities around, or is this just CFD?
Yeah, the Chicagoland area.
Okay. Oh, that's very interesting. Because, you know, I don't know, the Chicago guys got to win that because they're the ones climbing up the big buildings. And you see them. They come in, they got all that equipment on them. And one guy's got a huge axe. It's very much like Game of Thrones. And then they're just, you know, walking up the stairs. And you're like, oh my God. You know, they are such heroes to me for doing that. I don't like to walk up.
Definitely.
The elevator was out from downstairs from the garage, and it's like two flights of stairs. And I'm like, oh God. I think I'm going to have to find another parking space. It's an amazing thing. Kevin, how did you do it?
You just keep grinding, Ro. It's good to go if you have like a partner, if you're with someone, because I think if you get into the tempo of the step, and you just, I don't know, you grind through. It's tough, though. You're completely done.
I would totally throw up a lung. I mean, there's just no question.
The firemen, it's incredible. I mean, these guys are flying up the stairs with all this equipment on. You're just like, okay, I got to keep going. If these guys are going with all that gear, I got to get through it.
Ashley, all right, how do people sign up for this?
So to register for the 2020 Fight for Air Climb or the First Alert Firefighter Challenge, they can visit fightforairclimb.org/Chicago.
All right. Thank you, Ashley Gockin. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Actually, from First Alert. Thank you very much. They're the ones doing it. Change your batteries. I always forget when I'm supposed to change my batteries, but then it lets me know, doesn't it? There's always one that's beeping somewhere and you can't quite figure out where it is. Let's check in with Lauren Lapka. What's happening in the traffic and the weather? All right, my friends, let's now check in with our friend, Assistant Chief Meteorologist of the Rokan Show.
Am I assistant?
You're the assistant.
Because I'm an assistant to Dimitri, who's an assistant to Tom, right?
Yes, but Tom is like the CEO founder of weather, right? There was no weather before Tom Skilling, and then Demetrius is the chief meteorologist for this radio program. But then you are the assistant chief. Just deal with it, Rick DeMaio, because you have spent many years on television in Chicago and a aviation meteorologist, and now a lecturer. an instructor, an lecturer on this.
And a publisher of a book. I never tell you about that. We can get to that another time as well.
What book did you publish?
Oh, Aviation Meteorology Part 1. It's already being used, and Part 2 will be out during the summertime.
Oh, that's awesome.
But we can talk about it.
Yeah, I swear to God, I thought he just said aviation urology, but I don't exactly know what that is, but I'm just going to guess. All right, so let's talk about tomorrow. If you are on your way home right now, and it's beautiful, and it's, you know, we had one of the most beautiful February weekends I have ever experienced in Chicago this
weekend. 2 50s in a row, not bad, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Very lovely. And the sun seems higher in the sky, and just, you know, spring is in the air. But tomorrow, at this very time, it's going to be early January, all hell breaking loose.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know if it's going to be early January. I mean, it's not going to be super cold. If you recall that storm
all right, just stick with the fact there's going to be a huge snowstorm.
Right. You're right. I'm sorry, Professor Cohn. It's going to be early January. But, you know, it really depends on where you are. I wouldn't be surprised if you're listening right now up around, say, the Rockford, Janesville area. You'll be lucky to see an inch. Seriously. If you're up around the Waukegan, Racine area, you'll be lucky to see maybe an inch and a half. If you're down around Pontiac to Kankakee to Peoria, you'll probably see about maybe 4, 5, 6 inches. And if you're over in Porter County, Indiana, by the time you get to Wednesday evening, you can probably see 10 inches of snow. This is going to vary quite a bit from the north side to the south side, from the west side to the east side. It's going to be a highly variable storm from a standpoint of its impact.
All right, let's look at the heart of Chicago. The Chicagoland area. So we're talking about the city and and points 20 miles to the north and south and 30 miles out to the west.
Okay. Say from the loop up to Evanston, you want to hear what I'm forecasting? 2 to 3 inches. That's it.
Really? Through the whole thing?
Yeah. I don't know if you've talked to Tom or Demetrius lately, but since noon, this storm system has shifted further south. And I'm sure Tom is going to talk about that in his evening newscast. All of the numerical models have shifted everything literally about 50 miles to the south. But the key to this is whether or not we can get enough cold air in on the backside that maybe enhances a little bit of lake effect. So you're talking about Evanston northward 2 to 3, maybe from the loop southward into like northwest Indiana, you may get 5. Oh. This could easily be like a 2 to 3 inch event for O'Hare, maybe 3 inches for Midway. But the way it looks, Ro, this storm system is going further and further to the south. This is the second part that's coming through tomorrow. The first part that's coming through today just basically skirted the area, and that went south as well. In fact, this was the same storm that produced an inch and a half of rain in Phoenix on Sunday that delayed the Cubs home opener by about 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, well, then it's very famous rain. Here's the question. Could this thing potentially miss us completely? I like this update. I mean, this is very good.
No, I think from a standpoint of its impact, the impact is going to be felt more so Wednesday morning. It's not going to be felt that much tomorrow evening due to the fact that the temperatures are literally going to be right at about 33, maybe 34 degrees. And as Demetrius said earlier, even though it's going to be snowing at that time, you got a pretty good chance with the warm-up that we had over the weekend and a lot of salt on the ground. The roads are probably just going to stay wet. So I would not be surprised on a scale of 1 to 10. Tomorrow morning's rush hour, a 1. Tomorrow afternoon's rush hour, maybe a 4. Wednesday morning's rush hour from an impact, probably about a 9.
Okay, a 9?
Yeah, meaning on a scale of 1 to 10, with 5 being bad, 10 being really bad, it could be a 9. Only due to the fact that you're going to have whatever wet snow that occurred Tuesday night into Wednesday is going to be literally kind of like crusty snow with snow on top of it, falling temperatures and wind. And, of course, everybody drives like a nut anyway in Chicago on a morning. So
afternoons.
It just makes it even worse at that point.
Well, Rick DeMaio, as you know, at afternoons when it starts to go, if you get 1 to 2 inches going, you're getting in half an inch an hour. It's just the visibility alone gets everybody freaked out.
I don't think this is going to be that big of a deal from the city on west to north tomorrow afternoon. You really got to go in the southern Cook County and into northwest Indiana with the way this is setting up, and primarily due to the fact that the snow is going to be somewhat light
and temperatures are going to be literally right at around 32 to 33 degrees.
Wow.
So with the trend, and again, with the trend, if it keeps going south, less of an impact. If it stalls, who knows, they could be a little bit different. But I'm thinking less of an impact than what was earlier forecast.
All right, Rick DeMille. You're a brave man. You're a brave,
brave
man.
I'm a scientist.
I'm a scientist, damn it.
I'm a doctor, Jim. All right, talk to you later, guys.
Thank you, Rick DeMille, right there. Aviation meteorologist. It takes too much to explain exactly who and what he is. Just trust me, he's a weather guy. All right, Bodie is back. You promised you were going to come back in here.
He knows more about the weather than I know about the Blackhawks right now.
Did you work with him when you were Was he at Channel 2? He's not at Channel 2.
He was at 32. I think we crossed paths at 32 for him. He was at 32, right?
Yeah, he is.
Yes.
He's a force of nature, that dude.
He is. He's a good man.
You know, it's like having any engine. It's like asking a radio engineer a question. I'm still getting an answer right now from when I asked 3 weeks ago. He's still in here talking to me about it.
But like, I live south. I don't want more snow south.
Rick is like that. He just gives you as much information as possible. All right, we promised that you were going to come back and talk to us after the press availability of Stan Bowman from the Blackhawks to talk about these trades today, including one that is changes the argument that they were making earlier in the year when they're moving their second sort of starting goalie, out of town.
Well, he wants Gustafson, Leonard, they were both unrestricted free agents, unknowns after this season. Stan did not want to go into detail about where contract negotiations were with Leonard, whether they had begun, whether they had hit a stalemate, whether he knew they weren't going to happen.
With the idea that Leonard might be gone and then come back. Right.
Well, or even if they wanted to extend him right now before the deadline, before the season ended.
But they're trading him away. They're getting a little some value for him.
And then when asked about whether the door is still open, Stan has done this before. He said, well, he's not my player anymore, so I really can't talk about whether, since he's not my property anymore, I can't talk about whether he would be coming back here.
It's really
so
Django
that's that
and Chain.
Little opening that Stan has.
Yeah.
And I don't think Robin's price tag is going to change very much. And if they do want him back, it's going to cost him $6 to $8 million
so
a year.
So what happens with the Gustafson? Everybody was expecting to go. So I'm not even concerned about that. And did they get anything? Just a couple draft choices, right?
Yeah, they wanted to recoup some draft picks that they lost in trades last offseason in order to bring veterans like Andrew Shaw. So they got a second, a third. This goalie, Malcolm Subban, that we were talking about earlier, appears as though for now he's going to be the backup up here, while the two other guys that are in the pipeline will stay down in Rockford.
And he is a Subban.
He is a Subban.
He's a real Subban.
He's a real Subban. He's 26 years old. And as we said,
not an outstanding career. Not like his brothers.
Yeah, not so far. But, you know, maybe change of scenery. Maybe working with Jimmy Waite. They're going to wait and see. And they're not tied to him after this year either.
Okay.
Restricted free agent.
So what does that mean for goalie for moving forward? Let's just assume that – let's not think about this season right now. Let's think about what the 2020-21 Hawks look like.
Corey Crawford. I think they sign him. My gut feeling is they'll sign him.
He's up, right?
A two-year deal.
He's up. He's up at the end.
Restricted. And based on the way he's played this season, if he stays healthy the rest of the season, I tend to think he'll be their guy, probably at a price that he's at right now, maybe a little less, in order to stay here in Chicago for a couple more years. And then
that makes sense for him.
I think that's his preference.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't any disconnect between him and Robin over this whole situation. They've been really cool together about it. But my gut feeling is that that's the way this is going to end up going, just because the Hawks still have some financial issues. And I don't know if they can afford to bring Robin Leonard back for the price that he wants.
And Corey Crawford and the Hawks have had a very patient relationship with each other over the years.
Yeah, especially with the concussions that he's been through the last few years. And two-time cup winner, and the way he's been playing lately at 35 years old. And goalies can play up into their late 30s and be effective. But then you'll have these other guys in the system, whether it's Subban or the guys down in Rockford, kind of knocking on the door and more ready to take over for him.
All right. Now, there was some thought that there would be big movement here at this trade deadline. There was not. And it says to me that the core is the core is the core.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that, Chris Bowden?
Yeah.
Hockey insider.
Taves, Kane, most likely Keith. Definitely Brent Seabrook, depending on whether he is able to play after all these surgeries. They're going to continue to remain Blackhawks moving forward, and it's all about going to be about rearranging the pieces around them. And some are already in place, and others, they're going to have to move around and get some new faces in there.
Do you get a sense that there, because there's some fanfare, there's some young kids that Chicago has fallen in love with here, right? To bring Cat. Mm-hmm. You've got Gajula. And yeah. And probably, I mean, who would you say, who is the one player that is absolutely, other than the core, the young kids is mm-hmm. not touchable?
I would probably say DeBrincat, despite the year that he's having right now, and the two young kids, the 19-year-olds, because right. those are going to be the other guys who should be the ones kind of taking the baton here as the Taves and Canes and Keiths get older. Those are the guys who are going to have to drive things here and be the impact players that those guys were if this team is going to get back to where it was and needs okay. to be.
All right. Where it needs to be. I would say the playoff chances, did Stan address that in his, the general manager address that in his
no, press availability? No, but I think in so many words, based on the last couple, for this year, his idea on his philosophy this year was to get draft picks in return, to start looking towards the future and start bringing some younger prospects in to build through the pipeline. And whatever supplementary moves that they make, you know, are going to be related to the salary cap. So this year is in the books based on the way they've performed over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and it's evident by the moves that he made today, too.
Okay, yeah.
So the rest of the season is all about trying to get these younger guys to keep moving forward and progressing. And
well, you may have the rookie of the year on the Blackhawks.
Yeah, he'd be in contention. There's probably some other guys with greater reps coming in who may not have had the type of quality season in numbers, unfortunately, that Kirby Dach and Dominic Kubalik have had,
yeah.
that will end up winning it, but those guys are at least some encouraging signs for the future.
All right.
And that's where we're looking right
now. Chris Bowden, thank you very much.
Thank you.